Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The man!
You gotta beat the man!
Whoa! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town!
And man, is it about time!
And this is not a mirage! This is real! This is here! This is now! This is the second coming!
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital. To rock around, that's right, on top.
It took you right. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around, that's right, on time. It's tricky. It's tricky.
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 Tricky. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around, that's right, on time. It's tricky.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network. Undergroundradio.com always provides us with our 800 number, which is 877-588-9877. You can reach us by option one. You can also Skype Sir Rockin. It is two words. He is our technical producer, and he can get you on the calls tonight. It is in tribute to our 10 p.m. guest, New York City resident. Unfortunately, he's from Brooklyn, but our musical guests tonight are from Hollis, Queens. It is Run DMC Musical Night. So the notorious 187 Homicide will be joining us live during the 10 p.m. hour. So if you're here early wanting to speak with Homicide, he will take calls during the 10 p.m. hour. We will eventually get to WWE news on the way to Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. We'll get to some TNA news on the road to Bound for Glory at 10:10:10, as Abyss likes to remind us. However, we're going to open the show on a different note because a couple weeks ago we had mentioned the recent passing of WWE superstar Lance Cade. Recently there was a very nice article published on Slam Wrestling, which is a very nice Canadian website. It's been around for at least a decade, with Lance's former partner, Trevor Murdoch. And also, we were saddened to find out, we figured, okay, we're just going to open with that story. And then we were saddened to find out that probably the largest professional athlete to compete in basketball and wrestling in any sporting event, you may have known him growing up watching WCW in the early 90s as El Gigante. And then in 1993, he joined World Wrestling Federation back in the day as the Giant Gonzalez, famous for his match at WrestleMania 9 with The Undertaker. You would know him as Jorge Gonzalez, and he passed away on September 22nd at the age of 44. And as mentioned, the 7'7" giant, as my wife laughs watching a TV show in the other room, sorry about that, had a kidney problem, which unfortunately required him the use of dialysis towards the latter part of his career. Prior to that, not many people know it, but he actually was a well-known basketball player and came to WCW, funny enough, because his boss in the basketball court was Ted Turner, who owned everything in Atlanta sporting-wise at one point or another. He was actually drafted by the Atlanta Hawks in the third round, so we're going to say first hello to our friend from Canada, Mr. Greg Oliver. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And also we have a gentleman who had the honor and privilege of managing the Giant Gonzalez in WCW. You know him under a couple different names. If you followed him through his Mid-South days, you knew him as Downtown Bruno. You also knew him in World Wrestling Entertainment as Harvey Whippleman. Bruno Lauer is gracing us with his presence. Good evening, sir, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us.
Okay, good evening. I hope you didn't, it's funny. I'm actually sitting in front of my house because it's a beautiful night here in Walls, Mississippi, just south of Memphis where I live. And as you were doing the intro, 18-wheel truck was driving down the street. He stopped. I said, what the hell is going on here? The guy got out. He wanted to know how to get to the highway. I said, oh, my God. I'm fixing to be on a worldwide radio show, and I'm giving directions to a truck driver how to get over the 61 highway. So I hope that didn't come across over the worldwide air.
No, we're fine. We're used to funnier stuff happening. We're used to funnier stuff happening on our airwaves.
That's good, because I thought that was poor timing on his part. But, you know, what person sitting on a bench outside of his house at 8 o'clock at night in the deep south is on the worldwide radio? I wouldn't expect him to realize that.
For fans that aren't aware of it, how, when you were in World Wrestling WWF already doing other managerial roles, what was your initial thoughts when creative came to you and said, so we signed this really large person who could probably fit you in his suitcase. We'd like you to be his on-screen manager. And what was your initial feelings on meeting Jorge?
Oh, he was just, the minute he met me, he was treating me like gold. You know, he's a super, super guy. So I had I listened to him on the train. Isn't this great? Live radio, right? But he was a super guy from the minute I met him. He knew who I was. He had actually watched tapes of me to learn about the guy he was going to be with. And I knew who he was, too, from having seen him on the other programs and so forth. So at that time, which was 1993, I was already finished 14 years. So it wasn't, you know, something that would make me nervous or bothered me in any way, because I was just used to just dealing with whatever was thrown at me, whether it was good or bad. And I really thought that was going to be good, because, I mean, after all, I was managing and was the last manager ever of the largest guy that was ever to step foot in a ring anywhere. So, to me, that was a pretty, you know, huge deal. It was an honor. He was a great guy. So I'm happy to, you know, say that it happened.
Now, we've heard legendary stories from people such as Jim Cornette about traveling or being around the legendary Yokozuna, who in his own right was a very large person. However,
right.
What's it like to go to an airport with a 7'7" gentleman and check in, and all these people fly whatever airline you're flying with, all of a sudden go, yeah, hi.
Yeah, well, something. He always had to have an aisle seat. He always had to be in first class, not because he was cocky that it had to be a first class guy like, you know, Ric Flair type situation, but because he had to be in first class for the leg room. And I had to have an aisle seat, again, obviously, for the leg room. And, you know, everybody, he was comfortable with the fact that he was a giant. Like when we were on Regis and Kathy Lee back in 94, Kathy Lee asked him, you know, did he like being a giant? He wished he was 10 feet tall. You know, he knew that was his lot in life, and he made the most of it. So, you know, there was a lot of inconvenience. He couldn't go to the bathroom on an airplane. So, that was an inconvenience. I mean, he couldn't, you know, it's hard for a normal size person to get to one of those damn laboratories on an airplane. Imagine the giant.
Exactly. Have a question. We have an interactive chat room that folks can access through the wildtalkradio.com site. Jersey Girl, one of our listeners, wanted to know, which was a weirder situation, managing the giant Gonzalez or managing the very lovely Bertha Fay?
Well, here's the thing. And by the way, I love Jersey Girls. Newark's my favorite place to go in this country besides home. So, hello, Jersey Girl. It's funny. I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but as you have found out if you read my book, Wrestling with the Truth, I have to tell the truth about everything. The truth is I couldn't stand Bertha Faye. I hated her. You know, she was an awful person to me. I might get a lot of heat over that. I'm sorry, I'm going to be honest. But, you know what? I don't wish anybody dead. Don't ever take it that way. I'm very sorry for her friends and family that she did die, especially in such a tragic way. But I enjoyed managing George. We had a good time. We traveled together. We laughed and we told jokes. And he loved it. I bring him down to Mississippi here and show him how it was in, you know, here in the South. And he'd tell me he was the real Southern boy. He was from South America. So to him, I was a Yankee. And we laughed about that. We had a good time. But the fact I couldn't stand. You know, so I got to be honest with you. There's no comparison.
To Greg, as a journalist covering wrestling over the longest time, your memories of seeing, especially, because I mean, you're in my generation, so seeing, we grew up with Andre the Giant, but to see someone that could dwarf Andre the Giant come down to the ring, it's just amazing, Greg, to sit there and go, how does creative handle somebody like this?
Well, I mean, my biggest memories of the El Gigante were certainly the WCW days. I mean, they sent out that press picture with him and Ted Turner. Like, Ted believed in him. And that was rare in the day. And then to see him sort of awkwardly try and fight Ric Flair, who, you know, was a good 2 feet shorter than him. And I mean, those are the things I remember. He never, and maybe Bruno feels differently, but to me, he never really found it as a true calling in professional wrestling. He seemed to put in the time because his basketball career didn't really end up the way it should, but I hope he made some good money, and I was ashamed to hear his life ended early, but you know, I certainly enjoyed watching him here and there, but I'm not sure he was quite a guy that was destined for a long career anyway.
To Bruno for a second, because we mentioned the creative aspect. After his match, after the match of WrestleMania 9, what was there a program with Taker to go further than that, or for fan, give some fans the insights of your memories of dealing with a creative situation? Because I said he's 7'7", so he's not going to bump like a Rey Mysterio, or he's going to fly around like be able to get mat wrestling like a Dean Malenko or Chris Jericho. So, what? Take us into the creative office if you can.
Well, truthfully, and I'm being completely honest with you, I have never been privy to anything, you know, that's being decided by the quote unquote creative and of the business. Basically, what I've always done my entire career from 1979 to this date and on continuing is take what I'm given and do what I'm told. So I never go and ask anybody what's coming next, what do you have in mind, you know, what are you thinking about, where do I go from here. I've always figured I've got a job, they take care of me very well, I'm treated well, I've always done what I'm told. Never say no to anything unless I feel like I can't do it physically, or whatever. So, to be completely honest with you, I have no idea what might have been in anybody's mind, but I know physically Gonzalez just couldn't handle much more. Not the traveling, not the being in the ring. And let's just be honest here, he never really did get the hang of it in the ring. That was just something that, you know, he tried to get a grasp on, but it's like me. I could probably never learn how to, I don't know, you know, drive a speedboat or something, you know what I mean, even if I really wanted to. But especially if I was hired to drive a taxi cab, like he was hired to be a basketball player, and it didn't work out. They said, okay, Bruno, you'll be a speedboat driver. Well, I'll do my best, but, you know, I ain't going to be able to really, you know, my heart ain't in it, first of all, and my body and my mind or whatever, my abilities ain't going to allow me to do it. So right there, and then he never got the hang of it. He didn't have the physical tools. Obviously, he wasn't actually a great athlete. You know, he was hired to play for the Atlanta Hawks because he was 8 feet tall, practically, not because of his Michael Jordan like abilities. So, you know, it was very, very limited. And it was sad. He was limited by his size. As a small guy like me, would be limited in my size if I decided I want to be a power lifter. You know, it's just the way it is.
877-588-9877. Option 1 is the way to join us on Online World of Wrestling Radio with the legendary Downtown Bruno, also known as Harvey Whippleman, also known as Bruno Lauer. Also, Greg Oliver from Slam Wrestling is joining us as well. From our chat room,
I think Slam Wrestling is a hell of a website. I want to say I really like Slam Wrestling. It's very professionally done, very well done, very respectfully done, and I want to put a big sign of approval to Slam Wrestling.
Oh, believe me, we'll approve them like crazy in the next segment with him, because they've got great publications book-wise that they put out over the last couple of years that we'll talk about. Tony K from New Jersey wanted to ask Bruno, what was stranger, being on the road with Sid Vicious or walking around Manhattan with Jorge?
Well, honestly, and I have to say this with all, you know, openness, Sid and I are very close friends too. Always have been, always will be. It wasn't strange being on the road with Sid. I mean, yeah, Sid's a huge guy with a hell of a presence and a hell of an appearance, but not to say this in a disrespectful way to my friend George, but Sid wasn't a quote-unquote, again, freak of nature. You know, just a big, impressive guy. People would look at Sid and, oh, he must be a football player. He must be if they didn't know who he was, you know, he must be a wrestler. He must be a bodybuilder. But Gonzalez, he was just a wonder of the world. So, by all means, walking around with Gonzalez was definitely takes the cake when it comes to something like that, in other words.
All right, to Greg, the lost art of managing has been talked about on this show before, and since we have one of the legends of the business, I want to ask, as a fan and someone who's covered a business for the years, I know you're not a big watcher of the current product, but what is creative, and from what your colleagues feel and what you've been interviewed people over the years, and then we'll go to Bruno with it. Why has managers, in your opinion, disappeared completely, unless you're Silicon Valley or something along those lines?
You know, it's interesting because they put so much importance on the promo that guys have to be able to cut promos, this and that, that they've forgotten the shortcut of having a manager cut promos and have a heel stable and do that. But I think the other aspect is that there's no emphasis on wins and losses half the time. And the idea of the manager was that he was the person, and it was almost always a he, that would get that guy over the edge. You know, he was sort of a mid-card guy, but once he lined up with Blassie or with Albano, those were the guys that knew how to beat the local good guy. And that was sort of the idea, is that they had an edge all of a sudden as a manager to win and get the championships and get more money. Well, now that the business is just the business and they've forgotten about the wins and losses being important, the manager really doesn't serve a lot of purpose. I mean, I'm happy Paul Bearer came back, but really, in the end, what is he there for other than just, you know, to get a paycheck? You know, great for him.
And now to Bruno, I had some friends that as soon as I mentioned to them you were coming on here, they're old school fans like myself. If I remember right, and if I'm wrong, you can feel free to bitch slap me like you did Howard Finkel. You were trained in the Mid South area, the Memphis Coliseum era. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a hotbed from the 70s and 80s with Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee and Austin Idol and the Boogie Woogie Man, and then Jeff Jarrett later on, and you had Jimmy Hart in and out of there. Talk about just who were some of your mentors that helped you create the Downtown Bruno persona that you used for all these years and then eventually transitioned into Harvey Whippleman.
Well, I'll tell you this. Bruno Lauer created Downtown Bruno 110%. The persona, the name, Bruno's my real name, Bruno Lauer, but I put the downtown in front of it, which strange enough, it's a TV show I never, ever even watched. But a guy named Tim Reed, who's one of Plank Penis Flytrap on WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
He was on a spy show. I don't remember the name of it, the spy show. But I read in the TV guide one day that he played a character called Downtown Brown. I said, oh, my God, Downtown Brown. That sounds pretty good. Downtown Bruno. And that's where I came up with that. So now, as far as training me and teaching me, I owe everything that I've learned, that I know, that I ever have been or ever will be, any success I might have had, the house that I live in that's completely paid for, 100%, no mortgage, no liens, no loans, nothing. I owe that all from where it all started, which was the King. I owe the King everything. Jerry King Lawler, my best friend in the business, my dear friend, and I mean, I learned more with him, and I had a lot of other teachers, too. He was the first and foremost and had the best psychology, the best mind, the best everything for the business you could have. Then as I went along the years, you have to learn other aspects, other things from other people. I learned a lot from Phil Hickerson, who I managed, a great guy. I learned a whole lot from another great guy with a great mind for the business, Robert Fuller. Learned a lot from Jimmy Golden, who come to find out, which I didn't know this all those years, is actually Jack Swagger's daddy. But
that's how a lot of us felt when he first showed up. I'm sitting there chatting away with one of my friends who lives in Nashville, and I'm like, is that Jimmy Golden on TV playing Jack Swagger's dad? And they go, nah, it can't be.
Well, yeah, sure enough. And I learned a lot from him and went to Kansas City, learned a lot from Bob Keigel and Rocky Johnson's a good friend of mine that taught me a lot. I mean, I've had a lot of good teachers, a lot of good mentors, and I've tried to, you know, pass that along now. I'm, you know, one of the occasional instructors and consultants at Nightmare Ken Wayne's Wrestling School here in our area, and I try to teach people the fine art of the promo and the fine art of psychology, and I leave showing the proper way to do an arm drag to Ken and the other trainers, but I'm not good at showing you how to do the physical part, but I can tell you when to do it. You know, so, you know, I've learned a lot. I try to pass it along. I've trained one referee who's actually a state homicide investigator here in Mississippi, and that's his job, his full-time living. He solves murders, but he loves the wrestling business. We became very good friends, and I trained him to referee. Now he's a referee around Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi almost every weekend. He's on a spot show for somebody, so you know, I've tried to pass it along as best as I could anyway.
I have another chat room question from Tony K of New Jersey again. Wants me to ask you the strangest place you've ever lived. And he says he thinks he knows the answer, but he wants to hear it from you.
Well, Lakeview Trailer Court is where I basically grew up. A lot of people would find that strange, living in next to Corn Lake in Mississippi with 271 trailers right on top of each other. Or it could be home slash apartment slash office that was built inside a cotton gin down here in the Mississippi Delta. That could be possible.
Does Jerry Lawler's shed bring any bells?
Okay, there you go. It wasn't actually his shed. it's Jerry King Lawler has a guest house. He had his old house that he doesn't live in anymore, but in East Memphis. And when I was intelligent enough to get two DWIs back to back, one of them where I smashed Eddie Gilbert's car, back in the late 80s, Jerry was, kind enough to let me live in his guest house while I was going through my court cases and my jail time and everything else that I had coming from it. And next time Tony K comes on there with a question, ask him what is the best cookout he's ever been to. And I'll see what he says.
Yeah, he put in the chat right after it. He's like, I'm a good friend of his. That's why all of a sudden Lawler's head came up. We got one more question.
He's a super good friend of mine.
Yeah, we're going to get one more question in before the break. From, funny enough, Downtown Phil, did you think putting the WWF Women's Championship on you was a good idea creatively?
Well, I'm going to be very diplomatic about this. It had to be a good idea creatively because it was my idea. Now, let's just shoot straight here. the idea was to get the championship off of Stacy Carter and put it on Jackie Moore. Now, Stacy Carter, great girl. We've always got along great, but she obviously wasn't a muscular girl or a tough girl or whatever. Jackie Moore break a man in half. I mean, she's just very, very tough in the ring, to put it mildly. So how do you get it from Stacy Carter to Jackie Moore without Jackie Moore hurting Stacy Carter, unintentionally, but just because she's used to working that way, when girls like Luda and Sherry Martella can take it and dish it out as well. So here I came. Mr. Scapegoat, which was fine. It was my idea.
Before we go to break, Greg is going to join us on the other side of the break in a moment here. Please go ahead and mention the name of your publication that you wrote, and if you have any website information for the fans, if you'd like them to contact you.
Oh, sure. It's you can order my book, which is called Wrestling with the Truth. You can go to crowbarpress.com and order it anytime. And not to pat myself on the back, but...
Oh, please do. We like people doing that. We do.
Well, I would never put out a book with my name that I didn't believe in. And I just explained how it was in the years that I broke into business, how to get to the position of making a living in our profession. And I think the wrestling fans that are interested in a good story about how somebody like myself, it's not a big muscled up guy, it's not a former collegiate athlete or Olympian or whatever, can actually make it in the business. And I think you'd find it very interesting. And I'd also like to tell people to don't forget to go to SlamWrestling.com. I think it's fantastic. The last time I did an autograph session up in New Jersey, Slam Wrestling covered it great, has some tremendous pictures, which I've actually saved in the archives on my personal desktop. I look at it on a regular basis and show it to my friends and family, and I think they did a great, great job. I have nothing but good things to say about that website.
As we go to break, we're going to thank Downtown Bruno for taking some time to be with us. As we said, coming up after the break, we will get into the recent tragic passing of Lance Cade. Greg did a very in-depth interview with Trevor Murdoch that we'll talk about on the other side of this break. 877-588-9877, or you can keep talking away at us in the chat room here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
In the Philadelphia, Washington, Cross, New Jersey area and are in need of a licensed massage therapist? Then you need Johnny Cashmere. He specializes in a full body relaxation experience in 30, 50, and 90 minute sessions. Deep tissue and pressure point treatment are also available. His office hours are 9 to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday. To make an appointment, email backseatjk@aim.com. Johnny also offers one-on-one yoga and meditation sessions. What are you waiting for? Set up your appointment to relaxation now.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as...
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Brett Derry.
Candice McDowell.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Pilgrim, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
Here's a great way to stay up to date with the Wild Talk Radio Network. Sign up for the official WTR newsletter. That's right, Wild Talk Radio now has an official newsletter, the only place to keep up to date on the goings-on in the WTR universe. From show previews, exclusive interviews with the hosts and celebrities, and special contests just for those who sign up. Submit your email address and subscribe today to the WTR newsletter.
This is Lucha Libre USA superstar RJ Brewer from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Online World Wrestling Radio with Alan, Alan something. I'm not sure what his last name is. Watch, whatever.
And it goes a little something like this.
And we're back on Online World of Wrestling Radio. It is Run DMC Music Night because in the 10 p.m. hour, the notorious 187 Homicide will grace us with his presence. We're still joined by Greg Oliver of Slam Wrestling, who we'll get with in a moment or two. But before we let him go, Downtown Bruno wanted to mention another friend of his that unfortunately passed away. So go ahead, sir. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. I just want to be real brief. I don't want to take up the whole show. Two very, very dear friends of mine have also passed away in the last several weeks. I want to say to my Chaz family, his wife Kelly, and his two lovely kids that, you know, Booger and I were very close, as they know, and I want to say that he's in a much better place than all of us now. God bless him, and I miss him. I miss our yearly Christmas cards. I miss our occasional phone calls and our correspondence. And my dear, dear friend who I love very much, very, very much, Gertrude Luna Angel Vachon. I love you, girl. I know you can hear me. I miss you. And God bless you, too. Let's everybody give our prayers to Mike and to Luna. And finally, Lance Cade, who I knew and I got along with. I wasn't a close friend of his. I didn't know him very, very well or anything, but very nice guy. I really like him. God bless him, and best wishes to his family and friends and his children. And Skandor Akbar, God bless you. I didn't work with him on a regular basis, but I did know him, and I got along with him very well, too. So a lot of, sad occurrences. So God bless all the friends and family, and God bless y'all for having me on here. Have a good rest of the show, and I will hope to hear from y'all soon.
Wonderful. Downtown Bruno Lauer, thank you so much for taking time for us.
Thank you for taking time for me. Take care.
Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
From one sad situation to another, as we mentioned, Greg Oliver is with us from Slam Wrestling. If you go to Amazon.com and put his name in, or Amazon.ca, you'll put his name in and you'll come up with some really great publications, specifically involving the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. But the main focus of why he is here tonight, unfortunately, is the tragic passing of Lance Cade. And because of the seriousness of this topic, we're going to go ahead and let some audio play that Mr. Oliver has provided us. And this is from Trevor Murdoch himself. So let's go ahead and listen, and then we'll talk with Greg after the piece.
WWE thought they were putting two guys together so they could make $1 million. What they didn't know is that they were putting two guys that became, I mean, his best friends. And it breaks my heart every day. Greg, it's hard to talk about it now, man. My partner's been gone for 3.5 weeks now, and you're really the first person I've spoke to just for the simple fact that I don't want anybody thinking that I'm trying to capitalize on my best friend's tragedy and my best friend not being here. Because I would trade anything in this world besides my wife and children to bring that man back here and for him to be here with his kids. It is a tragedy, and it is something that I personally am struggling with Jesus right now, because I really don't understand what the point is taking a good man like that. You know, if people didn't like him wrestling as a wrestler, Ray, when they saw him on TV, that's fine. But this earth was a better place when he was on it. And in the wrestling business, the locker room was better when he was in it. This business was better for him to be in it. Because he didn't start it. He wasn't a fan when Stone Cold Steve Austin came out flipping people off. He was a fan from the time he could open up his eyes and he watched his first wrestling match. He loved the business, man. And every time he went out there, if you were wrestling with him, or hell, when you were tagging with him, your boots better have been laced up tight. Because that 280-pound gorilla was a perfectionist. He didn't care if it was 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 15, or 20. He wanted to make sure that when we went out there, everything, we were working for the number one company in the world. And he felt like everybody should have been on point. Everybody should have been the best. And when you didn't step up to that, he had no problem letting you know that. The thing was, Lance gave you time to get better. Right. Lance understood that you weren't trained by not everybody's got to be lucky enough to be trained by Shawn Michaels. Not throwing his name around. Shawn's good at what he does. Shawn's the best at what he does, to be absolutely honest with you. And if you were lucky enough to get trained by him, wouldn't you take it? I got trained by Harley Race, one of the toughest men in his time. Still one of the toughest men today if you met him. Or you hung out with him. Not everybody was lucky enough to be in a spot that Lance and I were in. And we understood that. The only thing we didn't understand was when you're given the opportunity to get better and you're given a place to go learn and get better, if you didn't take that advantage, after a while, me and Lance started going into business for ourselves and did what we had to do to make sure the match was great. If you couldn't keep up and you didn't want to put the effort in the business, you didn't love it the way we did, well, then we did what we had to do to make sure the match was as good as it could be. 90% of the time, it was just him and I. I mean, we would literally, if I got to the town before he did, he would, I would wait for him, and we'd get in another car. If he got there before me, I would, you know, I would wait for him, or he would wait for me. It was a very, it was a strong partnership, not just a partnership, but a friendship. Him and I, when we said we were the last three old school tag teams, it was a shoot because him and I literally, we shared hotel rooms together, we shared rental cars together. When you seen one, you seen the other. That was another little running joke in the locker room, was if you took on one of the guys, you knew you had to take on the other, no matter what it was. You know, like Lance and I would work it out on, you know, why the hell was I mad at that guy? We worked out on the back end of it, but initially in this business, a dog-eat-dog world, he knew that I had his back, and I knew that he had mine. Oh, I totally think he should have.
So did he just shot himself in the foot again and again?
I think he made a bad, I think that an addiction took control of his life.
Okay.
And that he fought that addiction and did everything he could, and I can only speculate. I can't even speculate. To be honest with you, I think that's what got the best of them.
Did you guys talk about that?
Yeah, we talked frequently about it.
Okay.
But it was also got to a point where Lance didn't want to tell me either. And I knew what was going on. You can't basically live with somebody. You can't, you know, he's one of the few men in this world, Greg, that I can say I love. And I'm not scared to tell anybody that I love that man. As a brother, as a friend, as an uncle, as an individual. He was good people, Greg. He loved his kids. He loved his wife. No matter what turmoil was there. He loved his father, his sister. He loved this business.
Some very moving audio. As mentioned, Greg Oliver of SlamWrestling.com. Probably got the website wrong again. I've been getting it wrong. Yeah, you can actually find it if you Google Slam Wrestling. You can find the article to the audio that we just heard. And an excerpt of it was posted by Bill Foley in the OWW Genesis forum, which you can find from onlineworldofwrestling.com. As I said, some really deep, dark stuff, unfortunately, seemed to have been going on in Lance Cade's life, Greg.
It was a fascinating interview. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in, you know, times of trauma, both, you know, from my years with the newspaper and certainly with the wrestling business. And Trevor was an interesting cat. He was completely open and talked about everything. And, you know, we must have talked for an hour and a half. And that clip was just a few of the highlights. It's a little bit hard to see there, but there's four or five clips there sort of meshed together, and there's no real lead-ins to them, but yeah, different topics and different things, and yeah, we talked everything from steroids and painkillers in the business to how they met to, you know, how they hung out so much time together. I mean, his kids called him Uncle Lance, and they'd spend their holidays together. I mean, it's remarkable that friendships like that seem to exist in such a crazy business, yet we hear Bruno talking about Luna and how close they were, and we forget sometimes as fans that these are real people with real problems, and they're not the superheroes that they perform or pretend to be on TV, and it's got to be hard leaving that behind and just being a real person and having real friends and trying to make those bonds that make life worth living.
No, I am not a mainstream journalist. I'm involved in the wrestling field, and this story really hit me kind of hard to the effect that I still have family in the New York area, and I'm interested in certain political realms. And obviously, as wrestling people were into Linda McMahon's PG-rated Senate run, as journalists, the flip comment that she made about, I think I met him once or twice, and then Lance's dad getting involved. Did Trevor get involved? I'm not seeing. Maybe
we did talk a little bit about that, and again, from a sensationalist standpoint, I mean, we talked about it more than actually in the story. But yeah, we talked about a lot of things that aren't in the story, to be completely honest. The fact is, as he says in the clip there, he doesn't really want to capitalize on it. He's not out there to make a name for himself, at the expense of Lance Cade. He has a lot of respect for Mr. McNaught, Lance's dad, and thinks he's completely justified in his, anger towards Linda McMahon for a flip comment. But the fact of the matter is that Trevor says he knows he met Linda more than a couple of times. But that none of them were really meaningful conversations. She was, he describes her in the story as, like seeing your aunt that you haven't seen in a year. She knew your name and she'd come over and chat with you, make sure you're healthy and that, you know, you're still enjoying your work, and then she'd move on and talk to more people in the room. And that was her job. I mean, it sounds like she'll be a great politician. From that, and that's not really a knock on her, but you know, if her job is in Connecticut, she's not going to be on the road with these guys all the time.
877-588-9877, option one is the way to join us on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by Wild Talk Radio, and clickwrestle.com, which is one of the places you can find our podcasts of this event and other previous ones. For fans that aren't aware of it, he's basically said in this column this was the only time that he is wishing to address this. I gotta ask, as someone who's jealous, how'd you score this interview? And what were your feelings going into this? To say, did you handling this with kid gloves, or what was your approach for Trevor?
Well, it's for journalists out there trying to make a name for themselves. There's nothing that can beat FaceTime. And so I happened to be in Iowa in 2007. At the inductions, at the, George Tragos Luthez Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And Murdoch was wrestling on a Harley Race show. He was tag team champion at the time. And so we're chatting in the back and doing a little story. And I turn off the recorder. I say, you know, it's a real shame we couldn't talk about Chris Benoit because of the media ban. And he goes, what media ban? And I said, well, aren't you guys under a gag order not to talk about it? Because this was about a month and a bit after Benoit's, you know, killing his wife and his son and then himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, no, man. And it turns out that Benoit had a huge influence on Trevor getting hired, let alone, you know, mentoring him a little bit. And so that was a fascinating story. And so when this happened, and since then, Trevor and I had met maybe once or twice at like the Colorado Alley Club, and it's no more than just saying hi. So we weren't particularly in touch. And then out of the blue, he'd emailed me and said, I want to talk about this. And he basically said that he appreciated the way I treated the Benoit thing. I didn't make it sensational. I just shared his thoughts on it. And at the time, it was a pretty important interview, too, because, you know, he was a current employee talking about Benoit, which didn't happen that often back then. That's the way it happened. I mean, going into it, yeah, I was nervous, but not really. I knew it would be a very emotional, gut-wrenching thing, but in a way, it's easier than, you know, calling Test dad, you know, Andrew Martin's dad, out of the blue and saying, hey, I'm a journalist. Can you tell me a little bit of what happened to him? They're different circumstances, and I guess I can frame it with a little bit of timeliness, too, right? It was 3 weeks later or 2 weeks later. That helped, I think, a little bit.
And one of your interesting publications over the last few years involves the website of Slam Wrestling, entitled Shocking Stories of the Squared Circle, that involved you and John Waldman. To lighten things a little bit, for fans that haven't read that book, I did, was very appreciative that ECW Press was able to send me a copy of it and raved about it to all my friends. Give a quick background on the actual Slam Wrestling and its current state in journalism today.
Well, Slam Wrestling's been around about 13 years now. It just, you know, we started up the canoe.ca website, and it was a national website in Canada based around the Sun newspaper chain, which had always covered wrestling. And in fact, at that point, the highest selling Toronto Sun newspaper was WrestleMania 6, the Monday afterwards. That was their highest selling of all time. And which was even more than like when the Blue Jays won the World Series. So that's telling you something about the readership of the Sun and wrestling. So it was natural for wrestling to exist on the website as it existed. And so John Powell and myself started it up, and all the connections I'd made years before as a newsletter writer started to pay off again, and all the experience I had in journalism school paid off, and the years the Sun newspaper paid off. And so it all came together in this beast that is now Slam Wrestling. And what I like to say is that pro wrestling journalism doesn't have to be an oxymoron. I mean, we have great writers, most of whom have journalism backgrounds. Very few of these guys are writing full-time. They may have a job doing something else, but they still love to write, and they still love the wrestling business. So why not set them loose on writing some interesting stories? And the book came about simply because we have so much great stuff. I mean, anything you've been doing for 12 years, 13 years, you're going to have lots of great stuff. And so the idea was that it was not just the best of, it was sort of an attempt to show the depth and the many different kinds of stories that we do on Slam Wrestling in the book. But it's also a little bit a peek behind the scenes about how some of those stories happen. Just like you asked me about Trevor Murdoch, how that came about. There's been some interesting stories about how we got some interviews over the years, and a lot we haven't even told. But I do appreciate the mention of the book. It's a good book, and it's a good old school and new school book, and that's important to me because that's what we are on the website.
And unfortunately, you also came into my library being a part of Benoit wrestling with the horror that destroyed a family and crippled a sport. And I know, as you mentioned, in certain circles, his name is taboo. How did you come to be involved in that publication? And initial thoughts, did you kind of go, well, I don't know if I want to talk about this? Or did you have the opposite feeling of, yes, and I got the perfect column, I'm ready to go right now?
Well, again, it's one of those things where over the years, Benoit and I had dealt with each other. I think I was one of the first ones to do a lengthy interview with him once when he started at WCW. I jumped at the opportunity. It's like, let me talk to him. And we did a big long interview. And I think after that, you know, we exchanged emails here and there. And when Eddie Guerrero died, I sent him an email, just, you know, a condolences thing. Like, you know, we weren't buddies enough that I would pick up the phone and talk to him about that, but it just seemed like the right thing to do. And then he sent me back these touching emails talking about his diary and how hard it was to deal with Eddie being gone and all these things, and it spiraled from there. And so when it happened, I had stuff that I'd never done anything with, like these interviews, or they weren't interviews, sorry, they're personal emails from Chris Benoit, showing his fragile state of mind. And journalistically, I knew it was gold. I mean, I'm not any different than anyone else out there in the journalism business. I, you know, but I also have standards. I mean, the, you know, National Enquirer offered me a lot more money than anything I got from, say, the Atlanta paper that ran the story. But, you know, I'd rather things see the light of day in the proper light. And that's what happened with the wrestling book. When ECW Press came along and, you know, they had people I respected working with me, including Steven Johnson and Heath McCoy and Irv Muchnick, I knew it would be an interesting book. And it was a quickie book, yeah, but I think we did it right for what we knew at the time. And I also will say that I lobbied for a chapter on Nancy to be in the book. I didn't want it just to be about Chris, and we had to remember her career. So that's a small little contribution I did to the book as well, not just the story of Chris's career.
One of the other things we wanted to bring up here on the show, we are about the new school. We're also about the old school. It's one of the reasons why we had Dan Tambruno on. You're very about the old school. You've published not one, not two, but three books involving the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. One of them involved the greatest heels of all time. Another one involved the Canadians, and another one involved the tag teams. Has anybody that was in these books that may have been omitted read it and wrote you emails going, I should have been number one and here's why? Or did anybody just go, thanks so much for mentioning us at all?
Well, I think you get a little of both. I mean, certainly part of the heat that exists between Bret Hart and I are because he thought he should be the number one Canadian wrestler of all time. And I don't really want to get in the heat we have, but, you know, it's all on his part. I have no problem with Bret. Other guys have, you know, Scott D'Amore told me a story. You know, he was out with Joey Legend, who was just Joe in WWF, and they were in the bookstore when the Canadians book came out, and he saw it, and he saw he wasn't in it, and he threw it across the bookstore. And so then Scott and I, years later, hosted the Baloney Blow at the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion in Vegas, and he did the same thing again, just to have a big laugh. You know what? You're never going to make everybody happy, and there's lots of guys that should have been in both books. Sometimes guys actually wanted money for an interview, and it's like, well, okay, guess you're not going to be in this book. And that's just, well, that's their choice, and it's my choice not to include them. And sometimes it's space considerations too. And And again, like what I mentioned about the wrestling, about slam wrestling, we're trying to be representative of the different eras in those books. So we try to do old school and new school and guys from the pioneering era and guys from the territorial days. And it was a different business back then, and we need to sort of reflect that so that those guys aren't forgotten and that style is not forgotten either.
Before we go to break, can we see other publications coming soon from the Hall of Fame? And for fans that want to know, is there a specific Hall of Fame that you are involved in? Because every time you turn around, there's the WWE Hall of Fame, the Cauliflower Alley folks have one. There's one in upstate New York that I think the Ghost Hunters crew that's on Sci-Fi Network is going to be going to.
Yeah, in short, the books have nothing to do with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York, but I'm a big believer in what Tony Villano and Mike Capano and those guys are doing at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I go every year to the induction ceremonies. I've run four dinners, fundraising dinners here in Toronto, called Titans in Toronto, to support the Hall of Fame. This is a real building, and as wrestling fans, we have to get behind this. This is not, you know, Vince McMahon making sure that, you know, his dad's limo driver is in the Hall of Fame. This is a real Hall of Fame that has incredible archives, and it's growing by leaps and bounds size-wise. You're right, it may be haunted, which was very funny to hear, because one of the things that's haunted is apparently the display from Dewey Robertson. And my wife, Meredith Renwick, is the one who wrote Dewey's autobiography. And so, yeah, we've had a lot of experience with Dewey over the years, and I can definitely see him haunting, just for fun. So, pwhf.org is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and all our slam wrestling stuff, you just have to type in slam.ca, and that'll be the slam sports site, and just click on wrestling from there.
Definitely, if you haven't read this article with Trevor Murdoch, it is a must-read. Before we go to break, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us and honoring us with just more than an audio clip. We're very happy to have spent time with Greg Oliver. Coming up after the break during the 10 p.m. hour, and who knows how long this one will go, the notorious 187 Homicide, unless he's celebrating the New York Yankees getting closer and closer to a pennant. Unfortunately, Tampa Bay won, damn you. Making my life a little harder, but hey, hockey season's not too far behind, so as we go to break, definitely check out the Slam Wrestling site, 877-588-9877, option 1 if you want to get in line for Homicide, on the Willow Wrestling Radio. We'll be back after this.
What's the meaning of this? I must be dreaming, everybody's got a demon when I see men feeding for a rhyme or rope. Sometimes I rhyme when I'm crying broke. Many, many, many records broke, roars broke jaws. A few months ago, I had to pause. During that time, me and my man was chilling on the corner with a quart in our hand. A beat broke out at Soul Kitchen's spot. It was crazy, baby, pop, so I run out shot. I seen him drop. Then came the cops, saying nobody run, everybody stop. I wanted to run, cause I was carrying my gun. Dollar Mac back in mind, shot with my nine. Everyone on the wall, that's what the cops. I'm a superstar for the wall, let's call him Darryl Mack. I turned around and said, what up, cop? He said, DMC, take the ass down the block. If it happened to him, it can happen to you. Cause that's what's happening on the avenue.
Greetings, my fellow geeks. This is Mace of Otaku Talk Live, and I have come out here today to address you as one of you. What I have done is I have created a download-only podcast for those of us who want to sit there and talk about comics, for those of us who want to sit there and just talk video games, and for those of us who just want to sit there and bash the living crap out of movies. What is this called? It's called Bashing the Books. Who are you going to hear on it? Me! You get to hear me go on and on about comic books, movies, and games. So, think of it as a mini OTL, but with more Australians. So that's Bashing the Books, available hopefully every Wednesday or Thursday, right here on WildTalkRadio.com. I now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the producer of Anything Goes, which you can hear every Thursday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, like most guys, and quite frankly girls out there, probably want to know what's going on through the mind of Sydney Sin. Well, here's a little secret. I have the inside scoop. We're that connected. And, well, I've been secretly taping her dreams for a while now. So, let's hear what goes on.
Sir Rockin is the greatest... Rock?
Oh, crap. She woke up. Well, if you really want to find out what her dreams, fantasies, and sexual desires may be, then tune in to Anything Goes right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network every Thursday night. As for me, I guess I'll be there too once I find a way out of this shed she has now locked me in. Cindy, can you please let me out? I'll be good. I promise.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
This is the bad part of this job, man. I love Run DMC going back to growing up in Long Island and traveling into Queens to see my dad. So listening to Run DMC with Jam Master Jay brings back the memories. Tougher Than Leather brings us back here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Thanks to Greg Oliver and Downtown Bruno. And thanks to the 27-time world champion New York Yankees. We're going back to the playoffs, suckers. Get ready, because we're coming to Tampa where there's 5,000 people watching a game tonight. They won too, so who cares? Get on the line, 877-588-9877, option one, because we have a guest that everybody in wrestling wanted, and he turned them all down because they wouldn't talk Yankees baseball with him. No, I'm kidding. He's recently at TNA Wrestling. If you live in the Northeast, you saw him in 1 weekend alone. He was at Evolve Combat Zone and appeared at Glory by Honor 9, and will be working with Ring of Honor in the near future. He's here until we run out of questions or he wants to go and party. The notorious 187 Homicide joins us on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Good evening, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, man. It's been crazy up north. I guess in Tampa, it's kind of quiet down there, but, you know, the race clinching the playoff berth, you know, like, it's about time it's putting a little bit of excitement to the fans, because right now, you know, Tampa is not that great, especially with the Yankees are coming home.
Yeah, so we did this with Steve Corino. We're going to bore people for a few minutes, and we're going to talk baseball. And remember, we're PG-rated fans, so if you want to call in and make fun of our New York Yankees, we'll fire back, but we'll fire back PG-rated. Going into this month,
you got to take over on that part.
Yeah, no kidding. Going into this month of September, we're both diehard Yankee fans. Were you nail-biting this entire month? Because every time it seemed to turn around, you're like, hey, we're close to Tampa. Oh, crap, we just lost 2 out of 4 to Tampa. And then had issues with on and off with the Red Sox. Did at any point you and your friends that are baseball fans hit the panic button and go, oh, crap, maybe we're not going back in October?
Well, not really, because all my baseball, all my friends, they love football. I don't got that many baseball players that, you know, are my friends, but they know about baseball, but they don't know about baseball. Like, I always tell them that this is a very unique season for the New York Yankees, because if people study the year of 2000, the Yankees are playing like the year 2000 season when they won the World Series against the Mets. You know, they was losing, their pitcher was slumping, you know, it was just falling apart. The fans of New York and Jersey were saying, oh, they're not going nowhere. And what happened? They went to Shea Stadium and they beat the Mets and they became the world champion. So this reminded me of the year of 2000. And I was watching when I was playing off the Red Sox on ESPN, and even Joel Morgan even said it, that this is the team they play for the year 2000, and right now they just, you know, if you talk about AJ Burnett, who's like slacking off right now, he's not playing his game, he's not like the last year AJ Burnett, but, you know, sometimes you got your ups and downs, and this is definitely AJ Burnett's downs. You know, CC Sabathia, you know, he's the only pitcher that we got right now who's playing really good. We got a good arm. His name is Ivan Nova. You got to watch out for him. He got a bright future. Even though he got knocked up the last game he started, but he got a bright future. You know, and, you know, Jabba Chamberlain is Jabba. It's kind of funny because I got the video game. It's called The Show for Major League Baseball. And they even said, the commentator said it. This is 2007 cessation, Jabba Chamberlain. In my head, I'm thinking like, wow, that's his only year that he played like a star. Right now, he's playing a little bit better, but after, like, Sunday game with the Red Sox, I think it was Sunday or Saturday, he became a flop. But let's see what happens. Right now, the Yankees in the postseason. The postseason is different from the regular season. A lot of baseball fans, especially minor baseball fans, doesn't know this, that when you go to the postseason, it's very different. Everybody plays hard, and, of course, everybody wants to play the Yankees. Everybody, right now, it's like boxing. We got the title. Everybody wants the title, especially the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies, they want us. Right now, they got a great pitching staff. I think they're the hottest team right now. If the Yankees don't make it to the World Championship, I think the Phillies, or maybe the Cincinnati Reds, to me, are the sleeper of 2010 is going to the World Series.
You just made Scott, Sir Rockin', our producer. You're his new best friend. He's born, raised Philly, and we've been talking trash for the last couple of weeks, Cohen. We're coming right back to the series. For fans that are aware of it, you've been down in the Florida area on and off for a while. Thoughts on, because as I said, we grew up, we've been to the stadium, the old stadium, I haven't been to the new one yet. So we're used to going to games, and it's 40, 50,000 all the time. What is it, in your mind, you followed the Rays a little bit living down here. What does that say to you and Tampa Bay fans that last night they had 12,000 and they almost clinched their thing last night? And then we had Evan Longoria and David Price sounding off. Put yourself in their shoes for a minute. So how does that affect you as a fan? Do you sit there and go, that's pathetic?
Yeah, it is true what, you know, Avon and David Puzz was talking about. You know, I was living in Tampa for 2 years, and Tampa is not really, it's a great city. Of course, if you got kids, if you want to retire, you go to Tampa. That's the life. It's in Tampa. But in my opinion, I'm a New Yorker. You know, I'm a city guy. And, I'm 33 years old, still want to go out, party, you know, clubs close at 4 o'clock sometimes. After party close at noon. Tampa doesn't got that, especially for the sports team. You know, like the Tampa. I hate to say this, but the Rays are one of the hottest teams in baseball for the last 3-4 years. And the fans is. I know what they got to do to the fans got to come to Tampa and see their team win. They just clinched the playoff berth like about a couple of minutes ago, and maybe like about 50,000 people was there. It should have been 20 or 30, you know. And I'm thinking that Tampa is really a football city and also a golf city, you know, because there's a lot of guys out there love to play golf. And I remember I was living in Sheldon Row, like about a couple of blocks away from a golf course, and I see so many people playing golf and also for football. I was telling Loki about this the other day. It's kind of funny that, you know, we got the Tampa. Look at the name, Tampa Rays. They play at St. Pete's, but the New York Yankees play at Tampa and spring training. And if you go to Tampa again, there's mostly more Yankee fans. Not only Yankee fans, but every time the Yankee comes on town, it's always a sellout. So it's just kind of funny. Like, I know a lot of people want to see the Yankees lose because we are the evil empire. We are the Ric Flair of Major League Baseball player with the thousand. You know, everybody say, oh, that we fight the World Series. You know, that's to me, that's an excuse right now. Like, maybe in the 50s or the 60s where babies used to get like about $2. And, you know, that's a lot of money back in the day. But right now, a lot of people say we buy the World Series. Okay. If we fight the World Series, what happened the last 10 years? We always losing. That's when we buy to lose. And I'm guessing the Yankees are God. You know, like, it's kind of bad that John Steinbrenner lost, because John Steinbrenner was the man that if they lose, he just give it to them. And they win afterwards. Now he's not here. His son took over. Let's see what happens, you know. But I think that's an excuse right now when people say, oh, they're about the World Series and blah, 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 and all that. Everybody got money. They just know how to use it. That's my opinion. Look at the Rays. They got money. The Boston Red Sox, they got money. I think the Red Sox should blow up that stadium and should get a new stadium already. I don't know if it's Wrigley Field or what's the third of oldest? Oh, Dodger Stadium. And I think Wrigley Field should be demolished. And that's
Whoa.
My opinion, you know.
Wow. 877-588-9877, option 1. Do not be afraid to call in and talk to the Notorious 187 Homicide. You mentioned being friends with Loki over the years, or Caval, as he's legally called for a while. He was Senshi in TNA. Your initial reaction as his friend and as a fan of the business, watching this past season of NXT where he was arm candy to Lay Cool, and obviously Michael Cole went off again on the whole, like they did with Bryan Danielson, about how he's not ready, he's a rookie, he's this, he's that. How do you think WWE handled his introduction for the fans?
I think the WWE is another planet. It's a new scene from the wrestling game. You're talking about international wrestling and also the independent wrestling is so different from the WWE. In my opinion, like when Vince McMahon said the WWE universe is really the WWE universe. Some people badmouth about Michael Cole. In my personal opinion, I think Michael Cole is trying to bring the internet fans because mostly if you talk about independent wrestling, even Ring of Honor, even New Japan, All Japan, Mexico, that's all internet right there. If they don't see TV from other stations, but that's all internet. So I'm thinking that Michael Cole is trying to bring the internet fans to the WWE universe. And I think that's a smart thing. But that's my opinion. I don't know if he's really shooting or he's not or whatever, but I'm guessing that he's bringing the internet fans to come to the WWE universe because if you look at the wrestling business right now, it's not like the 80s or the early 90s where you look at little kids coming to the arena and they watch their favorite wrestler or boo they villain. You know, it's mostly grown-ups, adults that go to these shows and they heckle and this and that. Look at myself. I was working for Spike TV for TNA Wrestling and the name Homicide. I got a bunch of kids saying 187. I be laughing because I be saying to myself, I really know why you checking, you know, because Homicide means murder. That's a police code, you know. And I always say to myself that, you know, Homicide, the name is not really good market for the business because the name of itself. And especially the WWE, I don't see myself going to the WWE as the Notorious 187 Homicide. I'd be something else, but that's another story. But with Kaval, Noki, Senshi, whatever you want to call him, man, when he won the WWE next, it's almost like if you bring like your little brother or your son, or you know, graduating from high school or college, you know, you understand, and you hear his name pop up, and he won. That's the way I feel. Now, Kaval, he came from Brooklyn, New York, a middle class kid. You know, he worked his butt off, 13 years in this game. You know, and I trained him for three, four years. I was very competitive and tense with him. You know, he deserved what he got, and he's a future for this business right now. And I'm very happy with Kaval, and hopefully, you know, he gets a program and gets some kind of a program to win the Intercontinental belt or feud with Bryan Danielson, or they call him Daniel Bryan, whatever his name is, and, you know, wrestle for the U.S. or not wrestle CM Punk, you know, or anybody. I just wanted to have a great program and have a bright future in the WWE.
As a fan, would that be something that interests you? Because we brought this up a couple weeks ago on this program. The way that they've handled this Nexus group, could you possibly be entertained to the idea of like an internet wrestling community gimmick of Homicide, CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Low-Ki, Kaval, whoever you want to call them, where you have a core group of wrestlers that could basically out-wrestle everyone on the talent roster? And do you think something like that in a creative aspect would get over?
I mean, I hope so. I think they won't. But if it happens, that'd be really cool. You know, to see like people like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Low-Ki go out there and out wrestle the real stars of the WWE. Because, like I said, man, the universe and the people came from the independent is two different worlds. The people from the WWE, and I'm not talking about everybody from the WWE. I'm maybe talking about like 50% of the roster. They didn't train and went through the indies and went international and knowing how the independent wrestling is like. They just go straight to the gym. I love your look. Boom, you got a contract. These guys like Low-Ki, Bryan Danielson, we did Ring of Honor. We did international like Japan, Mexico, the UK, all over the city. We bust our butts, you know, and I remember, like, I was watching Kaval doing a promo against, I forgot his name, Miz, rookie, Alex Riley. He was saying that, oh, look at you. You made it in 13 years. Hell yeah, man, 13 years. I've been doing it for 16 years, and I finally made it in my 12th year. And me looking back, what I did, I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud to myself and I'm proud to my crew. that bust their butts and make it. I think I like stuff like that. I don't like the easy way in. You got to take vitamin C and tan and look it all good to get a contract. But it's a different era. It's a different wrestling business right now. And you just got to take it the way it is. It can't be bitter. You got to run the ball. Give me the ball, and I will run it. So it's very different from the wrestling aspects right now.
We do have an interactive chat room at wildtalkradio.com. Jersey Girl wanted to know, being you've been injured on and off over your career, what is the most hardcore match in ROH that you have been involved in? I remember you and Colt Cabana having some epic hardcore matches.
I think it was a tie. Just tell yourself, me and Colt Cabana had a street fight in Chicago. Cannot remember the date, but I remember the staff of Ring of Honor was very, very angry of me because I told the fans throw all the chairs in the ring.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it was like the old ECW days, and one chair hit me in my head. And after that, you know, Colt Cabana gave me a superplex top up through the chairs in the ring. Then I think my second one is, of course, me and Steve Corino in a barbed wire match that happened on November 29, I'm guessing 2004, 2005. And that was a real stepping stone, too, because you're talking about dangerous matches full of barbed wire. And a lot of people think that, you know, two people, they get along, all that's all acting. Me and Corino, we don't get along. We respect each other, but there's a couple of things that we don't like each other. So when we went out there and wrestled a barbed wire match, we would just keep thinking about our kids. Because if he wasn't, one of us would be in a coma or, God forbid, in jail. And, you know, I came out of there with a couple of stitches and bruises, the same thing with Corino. You know, the
you
match
made
was over.
In one ear, dude.
Yeah, I mean, when you don't like somebody, it becomes very intense. You know, very intense, and it's wow. I mean, I look back when I smacked him in his ear. Do I apologize? No, I don't apologize for what I did. You know what I mean? Like, I apologize if his son, that, you know, talks to him in his right ear, and he's deaf right now. He got to talk to him in his left ear. I apologize to Kobe Corino, but not Steve. You know, Steve broke my shoulder. I did a dive, and he thought I was Ric Flair born top row, and he just drove me to the canvas. You know, so we, when we go out there, it's very intense. You know, a lot of people should be looking out with tapes. We have the new era of Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes at this end. He's the best in the world, I'm the Terry Funk. And we just go out there and we try to perform for the fans who deserve, you know, the performance. And sometimes it just get out of hand, you know, and somebody be in the hospital. And that's the relationship that me and Steve Corino got, you know. As right now, everything cooled down because I went to Florida for TNA for 5 years. We didn't see eye to eye. The man even went to Puerto Rico to wrestle, and I got a lot of friends in Puerto Rico, so I could do something to step up our figure, the same thing with him, too. But it's a respect thing, you know. I do respect him and his wrestling ability, what he did for the business, but in closed doors, that's a different story.
877-588-9877 with the Notorious 187 Homicide here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network and Click Wrestle On Demand. In our chat room, you mentioned Ric Flair, so one of our listeners wanted to know, if you could choose between Shawn Michaels in his prime and Ric Flair in his prime, who would you want to have a program with and why?
Ric Flair. That's the man that he makes you as a star. A lot of people in the 80s, they didn't see that because everybody was like, why Ric Flair is getting the most money, the most calls, the most girls? Ric Flair was not a gimmick. You know, a lot of people were jealous of this man, but the one thing Ric Flair was doing, and I could be wrong because I got this from my teacher, Manny Fernandez, who told me tons of stories that even to this day, Manny Fernandez don't like Ric Flair. But Manny Fernandez used to help a lot of guys to make stars. And I think with me and Ric Flair, man, we're going to have a classic feud, a classic battle. He's the kind of man that makes you. The same thing with Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, he's a hell of a bumper. He makes you a star, too. It's not a close one, but I got to pick Ric Flair for this one.
All righty. Interesting answer. For fans that don't know it, this is not your first stay in ROH. You've been in pretty much on and off since the beginning of the company in 2002. Then you were there for the rebirth after everything went down with Gabe and Rob Feinstein, and now you're here and Gabe's gone completely and Delirious isn't creative. Take us through, in your mind, as a wrestler and as a fan of the business, which era did you prefer to be a part of? I mean, you're just starting in again with the new era, but take us through, what was the most creative and most fun era for you to be in ROH?
I think Gabe understood where I was coming from and what could I do for this business. A lot of people look at me, and they look at me as a backyarder. I want to be New Jack, who does hardcore wrestling. They didn't see, like, the way, the capable I could do to this business, you know. Like, I don't care what anybody says. I'm one of the smartest men in this wrestling business. I study a lot of people like Kurt Angle, Ric Flair, even Hogan. You know, people like Manny Fernandez, Terry Funk. Now, I study a lot of people. So back in 2002, when Gabe was the booker for Ring of Honor, you know, he looked at me as, like, this guy's going to have a household name, you know. Like, I got something for you. He reminded me a lot like Paulie Dangerously and Bill Watts. I don't know why, but he reminded me of these two guys very much. And, you know, the new era, like, I don't know about Ring of Honor. The only thing that I know that a lot of these guys is like, man, I wish you go back to Orlando, go back to TNA, blah, 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 blah. Man, you lucky that I came back to Ring of Honor. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of these cats, it's kind of funny because when I made my return, a lot of people were telling me, well, what you and Roderick Strong were talking about, you know, and basically we were just, like, arguing. And he was telling me, go back to TNA, go back to TNA. You know, like, people like myself, Samoa Joe, BJ Whitmer, Christopher Daniels, even Austin Aries, we made Ring of Honor, you know. If it's not for us, a lot of these guys of the new era of Ring of Honor would not be wrestling. They'd be selling hot dogs at Coney Island for Nathan's, or they'd be a janitor for a school, you know. And when I came back, a lot of people was like, oh, man, this is trouble. Or, like, I worked my butt off. You're going to work your butt off if you want this belt. Man, do not tell me about working hard, because that's the one thing. I'm the one who's working. Talk about working hard. I am still injured to this day, and I'm still wrestling because I like this. I'm a passion for this game, for this business, you know, and I want this. And I want to return to a company that not only that I made my money, and also Ring of Honor is a very unique and very different promotion from all over of the country. To me, Ring of Honor is like ultra-para pro wrestling from the 80s. And I love Ring of Honor. Right now, there's a new era. There's a lot of new faces. There's a lot of new faces in the crowd who doesn't know me. I got something in store for these people. I can't wait to come back.
Jersey Girl wanted to know, you've been on both sides of the fence. You've been a good guy and a bad guy. Which does Homicide prefer to be, a bad guy, a good guy, or maybe a shade of gray?
Man, I just don't give up. You know what I mean?
Hey, now.
It's not, to me, it's like, what year are we at? 2010. It's not such things as a bad guy or a good guy. You know, or what these smart marks be saying, you know, heels and baby face. To me, it's no such thing as that, because a lot of these new people who's watching wrestling, they just like this person. And they can be like, perfect example, LEX came to the game in wrestling, started in 2005. People said he was racist. We went out there and we bashed the government. We almost burned the American flag. We was calling gringos and crackers and all this, you know. My finisher name was the Gringo Killer. For people who doesn't know what that means, we're going to kill white people. And you got these Caucasian chilling for us. You know, like, we say these harsh, bad things about, you know, white people, and they loving it. And to me, there's no such thing as a good guy and a bad guy. It just go out there and perform. To me, the homicide character, whatever you want to call it, like I say, I'm just like, I don't care. I just go out there, you mess with me, then you're going to run for your money because you're going to have a challenge. You know, like I got people that cheer for me, and of course, I have people booing for me, but I'm not talking about booing, I'm talking about harassing me, saying racial comments that I should jump over the guardrail and stab them with my fork, but I'm not, you know, but in my opinion, I think I'm better as a tweeter. How about that? In the middle.
For fans that aren't aware of it, I've covered TNA Wrestling from 2002 to 2007, so I got to see Homicide pretty much on a regular basis. Take us through your initial meetings with TNA, Terry Taylor, Dixie Carter, and what made you say this is the next step for me as a person and Homicide as a character?
Well, when I was little, man, I was watching NWA and WWE. It was on TV. So when TNA came along, the national TV, especially Spike, you know, back in 2005, I had between the WWE or TNA, I had Mick Foley, who was helping me for the WWE, because he saw one of my performances in Ring of Honor in Madison, and he couldn't believe that this Latin guy from Brooklyn had, you know, these people to palm my hand. So he was like, you'd be great for the WWE, you know, and give me the executives, producers, and also Johnny Hitt's number to give him a call. Then also you had Conan that I wrestled him in Puerto Rico with him and Rock Killings, and he liked my style. You know, we get along great. So he even told me, I'm going to get you a job for TNA. So right now I'm like, wow, I can't believe it. You know, he's two great, you know, big names. Is going to help me, you know. So I was like more of a surprise, but I don't know what direction I'm going to go. So I had like a couple of people, you know, getting some advices. You know, one company is less traveling. The other company is more traveling. This company is less national program. This other company is so much more. So, you know, like for some reason I took TNA. I went with Conan. He told me that he was doing this character called the Latin American Exchange, basically a military thugs, and just go out there and just take over the business. You know, it's almost like the NWO, the LWO, but in my opinion, I think it's better. You know, we didn't give any chances, but I think it was better. We were hot, and I remember at that time, Dixie Carter was not working for TNA at the time. It was still Jeff Jarrett who was still the boss. Terry Taylor was the boss, and me and Terry always talked about a lot of things. He's another individual that always helped me about the business. And, you know, both of them got me a job. I remember to this day that Conan called me up. He said, "Dog, you made it. You go on national TV." I told him, "Sure, I changed my name." He said, "Nope, you're going to keep Homicide. You're going to do LEX." They faxed me the contract, and Jeff Jarrett's signature was there. I signed it. And 6 hours later, I broke my shoulder against Steve Corino. And I thought my dreams had shattered. I was like, oh, my God, I got to kill this guy now. And, you know, 3 months later, you know, I had an 18 joint, third degree in my shoulder. Three months the past. That's when I went to TNA and, you know, they gave me the ball and I went with it. And Elias became one of the hottest acts in the wrestling business.
Unfortunately, I happened to miss the No Surrender 2006 event. I had a good excuse. I went to see my dad in New York and then went to see some Broadway shows. So I got to miss one of the best matches in TNA history with the Ultimate X and LAX and Styles and Daniels. Probably the most difficult match up until you doing crazy climbing jungle gym matches on January 4th. Was that the toughest for you?
I think that stupid cage was the toughest match. I mean, the Ultimate is my second, because I had a bad shoulder. And if you look at the tapes, I was doing military climbing while I was going through the ropes. It was 20 feet down. So when you take a bump, it hurts. You know, and plus it was the first ever tag team up to my ex. There's a lot of confusion, but hey, man, that match was so special because that's the match that LEX was really born. The LEX was in the map, and I got to thank Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles for that because they're the ones who put LEX in the map with that match. And I remember, man, I was, for the first time I was nervous in a long time because I was saying to myself, I'm not American Gladiator jumping up these ropes at 20 feet up high, you know. And it came out great. I mean, I took a bump under Dominic Cotto, AJ Styles. Oh, man, I thought I couldn't breathe for like 5 minutes. And after that, you know, the match came out great. I think it was one of the candidates of Match of the Year. We stole the show. And that January 4th, all I got to say, crap, doo-doo. That's all I got to say.
As I said, I'm not tooting the horn. I'm just saying it because it's true. I got the experience of being around you and Hernandez several times at the Orlando Ale House. What was your relationship with him before LAX was founded? Because he had done some stuff with ROH's Hot Stuff Hernandez. What was there a friendship there beforehand? And how much of a bond was created being LAX?
I mean, it wasn't a friendship, there'll be. Back in the days when he came to Ring of Honor, I just seen them. It was off and on, like high and by kind of relationship. And I remember Connor was telling me, like you're going to get this guy, and this is Hernandez, Hot Stuff Hernandez. He's from Texas. I'm like, yeah, I know him. I said, yeah. So I have a bond with him, you know, because we need to, you know, have this little click going on. So after that, he came to TNA, man, we clicked right away. You know, we had the same mission. We want to take over, make a lot of money, and, you know, be major stars in this business. We clicked right away, and after that, it was like more like everywhere I go, he's behind me. You know, it's kind of funny because this man is a monster. He's big, and I'm this little guy. You know, I'm like a Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. That's my attitude, you know. And every time something happened, he always got my back. And I'm like, dude, I appreciate that, but, you know, it's cool. You know, eat your little chicken nuggets or whatever, you know, because the man loves to eat. But you know, we bonded very well. To this day, we still talk. He's doing LAX in Mexico. You know, we still talk, you know. So we still really, really cool. You know, that's the one thing I'm thankful that people that bonded, you know, because a lot of people, when they leave the business, they forget. That's when True Colors come out. When I left TNA, oh, man, I've seen a lot of True Colors. You know, people that I thought that we was cool, yeah, right. But, you know, like people like Samoan Joe, Hernandez, you know, like a lot of these cats, Jay Lethal, man. Like, I still talk to these guys on the roster, and I'm thankful for that, you know, because a lot of times when you leave, that's when True Colors comes out. And I learned. Oh, boy, dude. Then I learned. But, you know, I still talk to Hernandez, man, and we still, like, we still LEX. You know, a lot of people say LEX is dead. Nah, man, we just taking time off.
The Notorious 187 Homicide joins us on the World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network, undergroundradio.com, and Click Wrestle, where you can possibly find matches of Homicide. And if they're there, what are they doing there? You should have a DVD already. You should have a catalog of his work. One of the folks in our chat room wanted to know, you mentioned being managed by Conan, and you were also managed by Julius Smokes on and off in Ring of Honor. But what legendary manager from WWF, the NWA, world class, wherever, would you like to have been managed by? If you could take the Hot Tub Time Machine back, who would you, the Notorious 187, feel would click the best with you?
Gary Hart. It'll be Gary Hart. I remember when we did Major League Wrestling, called Barrett the promoter. We supposed to do the new JTEX with me and Loki. And Gary Hart was our manager, but, you know, the company went, I guess, bankrupt. And we just did one time, and I was saying to myself, this is the guy that grew up. I'm not grew up people watching like Bobby Heaton, who's phenomenal, Mr. Fuji, you know, Johnny Valens, you know, like people like Jerry Hart. Jerry Hart is like my number one. I don't know why. I just feel that click, you know. Same thing with Paulie Dangerously back in the days when he had that 1980 cell phone, crack people in the head with it. That's my second pick. So it got to be Gary Hart my first and Paulie my second.
What was ever told to the talent? Because that's one of the first places that you and I met besides the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup. Take us back to that MLW Pro promotion, which was done on Sunshine Network here in Florida and other areas. What was told by Cord Bauer and the people to the talent as to why it ended up going under? We asked Carino, and he kind of gave an interesting answer, but I'm curious as to what was told to people like yourself.
I'll be honest with you, it's been a while back that I don't remember. It could be with money, because everything is money. You know, you don't have enough money. And let me tell you something, Colbert, he had a good product. He had the entire ECW staff behind, like the cameraman. He was legit, but I think he had a job at WWE, and, you know, it wasn't going well with the money. And I guess he closed down. I could be wrong. I don't know, but I totally forgot. But his promotion, it could have been one of the greats. It could have been like the new TNA right now.
Unfortunately, during your career with TNA, some things got interesting. Jersey Girl wanted to know, what were your thoughts on what went down with TNA and Conan, seeing he was the leader of your faction when he left to what eventually turned into be medical reasons and some very heavy-duty legal reasons?
Well, after he left, man, like, nobody wanted to see the guy that gives you a job or your leader or the man who makes you a top star goes. But he had a personal issue with legal battles, and also he definitely had injuries. You know, he was homesick. He wanted to go back to Mexico. And I was like the general, the second, you know, leader. So when he left, I took over. But, you know, nobody can place Conan the way he is. To me, we tease. I go back to Brooklyn and all my friends. Now, they're from the ghetto. They're like, they're not about wrestling. They're like, man, Conan, he's like the Farrakhan of Latinos. And I'm saying to myself, what you mean the Farrakhan? You got to hear when Conan speaks. He's like Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, Malcolm X, Che Guevara. He's a very emotional speaker. You know, he's awesome with his, like, my English is terrible. I got no shame of it. I will let you know. It's horrible. I'm from the hood, you know. I'm Puerto Rican. I talk a lot of Spanish. But Conan, he was an ex-Navy, a boxer. He read lots of books for, he's a great talker, you know, and when he left, man, it was just kind of sad, but, you know, he always hyped me up, hyped Hernandez up, don't give up, to see what happens, you know, in his words, things gonna pop off. So we did what we did. We trying to, like, you know, control LEX and not dot it out, but decisions was made. You know, I turned on Hernandez, and you know the rest.
Before you turn on Hernandez, you had Angel Martinez come in as Linus, which many people don't get as a ha-ha funny involving Dixie Carter's husband, Serge. Thoughts on her coming in, and how do you feel she got over with the fans in Orlando and at house shows?
I was telling her, man, she got the swagger. She doesn't know what that means. But she got this charisma, man, that she just look at you. It's like it's almost like a dancer, you know, like always looking at that person and boom, got him. That's what she got. She got that it. You know, she's great in the mic. You know, she's an awesome valet. She always got the crowd in her hand. You know, when she came to TNA and was part of the LEX, but I was kind of happy, man, because she's a Irish-Mexican boy from the West Coast, very different. A lot of people looked at her as a vampire. I'm like, whatever, she's like a bootleg vampire, but whatever. But after that, you know, she came and became Selena, you know. But in my world, her name was Shelly Martinez, and she brought that it to LEX, and I was kind of happy. We needed a chick in LEX, and she was perfect. You know, she got the looks. She's a hottie. She's a mamacita, you know. But like I say, politics ruins good things, and she was part of a good thing, and things got ruined.
Oh, and we'll get to that, believe me. 877-588-9877, option one. I'm Alan Wojcik, the host of Online World of Wrestling Radio, joined by the notorious 187-HOMICIDE. He will be appearing soon for Ring of Honor. Go to ROHWrestling.com. He's also involved with Evolve Wrestling, which we'll get into in a few minutes, and the folks at Combat Zone Wrestling. For fans that remember it, it was Madison Square Garden. It was supposed to be a book deal. Next thing you know, Eric Bischoff shows up, Dixie Carter shows up, there's a Spike TV banner, and brother, Hulkamania is coming to ruin TNA Wrestling, and I know they're listening to this, so, hi Stephen Godfrey, I love you, and I should have had your job. Initial reaction from you and other TNA stars when you heard Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff were gonna be joining the promotion?
They're gonna take over. Simple. They're going to take over and they're going to change the game in TNA. And I'm not part of the office, or I'm real tight with people that was part of the office, but they never tell me what's going to be their game. You know, in my opinion, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff got a vision. They got a different vision. And when they came to TNA, they want to put their vision and change the wrestling game. You got the 6-7 ring. In my opinion, I don't like it, but it's good for business. It's different from other wrestling companies. The only 6-7 ring they use is in Mexico. But, you know, it's 6-sided. They got rid of it. They want to go traditional-wise. Like I said, they got their own vision. You know, I remember I was reading some stuff that Coley Deaner, like Hogan say he looked like a backyarder, or he looks like garbage, so they fired him. In my opinion, man, that guy, he got talent. I don't know why, but that's a part of the game. The same thing with me. A lot of rumors, you know, going out there that I want to leave TNA, you know. And I tell you this, I was very frustrated in TNA because I'm from New York, and that's the one thing about New Yorkers, that we go out there and we know that we can do something huge and make good money for the business. And that's the way I am. I am so confident that when I go out there, good things are going to happen. But they got their vision, and I was frustrated. And I remember one time I told Terry, damn, you don't want to use me. I want to get released. I got denied. You know? So when January 4th came, I did that American Gladiator stupid cage that I regretted.
Oh, yeah. We talked online about that a couple of days after, and I'm just sitting there going, typing away. My wife showed it. I said, look, that's my friend Homicide. That's your friend Homicide about to fall. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
What was your mind when they came to you and said, all right, we're going to do the traditional lockdown escape match, but we're going to have you climb all the way up there just to have Jeff Hardy come out?
I swear to God, I thought everything was going to be okay. You know, like, I looked at it, I could do this, you know. Like, I was like, Allen Iverson, forget about practice, you know. Like, and things didn't went well, you know, like these it's different, you know. They bring gimmicks to the table. It's different now. It's a new era. But I really hate that cage. I feel like I was back in prison. I did 2 years, and I feel like I was back in prison. So, I'm not an American Gladiator. I'm a professional wrestler. My limit is to go out there to get booed, to get cheered, to get beat up, or to beat up somebody. Come out there and make sure the fans are happy with what they got. That's my job. For me, climbing the cage and knowing it's a very dangerous cage, the 35 feet drop, and the angle, it's so ridiculous that you're like upside down. People like Jalito, Kaz, Christopher Daniels, oh, they did it. They went over. They had no problems with that. But, you know, these guys, and I'm not saying that I'm athletic. I am athletic. But I'm an athlete with neck and injuries, you know. And, yeah, it was my fault that I should have told the truth so that I should have practiced this cage and let's see what happens. And, man, I hate that cage. It's just crazy because it's January 4th, brand new TNA, live. I'm the first match. Now I'm the first match. I'm going to have this hot feud and hot angle. And everything went down the toilet. Just like the Tampa Bay fans. So, that's the one match that I really like. Oh, my God. I can't even see it because if I see that match on tape, I'll break it. Or I go to a Kmart or Walmart. If I see the DVD, I might just steal it and burn it.
We got some interesting emails at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. This one came from Mike Ligori of Tampa, Florida. Many people love him. Many people hate him. Your overall thoughts on your time working in TNA with Vince Russo as the creative drive?
I got no comment with him.
Okay.
It's not that I don't want to shoot on him, but it's like, he don't deserve me saying nothing to him. I'm not saying that I don't like him. I don't hate him. It just, he don't deserve his name to be mentioned in my mouth.
Okay, that's fine.
But a lot of people should think about. Yeah, a lot of people should think what I just say, and maybe they get the picture.
Hey, we got one from Todd Ward of San Diego, California. Wanted to know if you were involved in creative, would you have liked to have had a mini run or a shot at either Samoa Joe when he was world champion or Christian Cage when he was world champion? Could you have seen, I mean, you were ROH world champion, you were FIP champion. Do you think Homicide could have been NWA or TNA world champion?
Oh, hell yeah, man. I would love to feud with Christian Cage at that. And Samoa Joe, me and Samoa Joe had classic feuds in Ring of Honor. We saw like every building, Chicago, New York City, and Philadelphia. We had great battles, you know. Like, a lot of people was like, man, he kicked your butt, but I'm the one who made him like bring his A game. But Samoa Joe, yeah, man. Christian, oh yeah. Christian to me is like the most underrated wrestler maybe in his business of all time. The man should be world champion everywhere he goes, including WWE. He deserves to be signed with Chris Jericho and become the world heavyweight champion or WWE champion. Like, he's smart for his business. Like, he deserves to be bigger the way he is right now. And hopefully, he'll be bigger.
We got another one from calling himself FIP Mark. Homicide, loved your time in FIP. Can you talk about your series of matches with CM Punk that, if memory serves me, ended up with you brawling into a strip club?
Yeah, VFP's still alive?
That's on and off. Wow. Sal's kind of running on and off. He's involved in Evolve and Dragon's Gate, but go ahead and talk about this match, because I believe this happened in Tampa.
Yeah, Tampa, one of my favorite strip clubs, called Cherry Something, and Sal was the owner. And I remember me and CM Punk, it's really CM Punk, you know, that was telling me, first they build as a pitchfork count anywhere. And CM Punk was telling me, let's do a ribbon style. Let's go all the way to the strip club. And I'm saying to myself, like, this is going to be problems. I told Punk, you sure you want to do this? I don't care. You know, I'm stupid like that. That's my business. But if you want to do it, don't say no. That's almost like Boss Mahoney. I had a match with him a couple of days ago. I wanted to, like, go to the street in Queens Boulevard. But, you know, he didn't. But I told Punk, you sure you want to do this? He said, yeah. All right. So we started in the wrestling ring behind the building where the strip club is at. We went outside. There was just a parking lot. There was flying cars or whatever. It was making our round. Maybe 30 yards away was the strip club. A lot of, like, I guess customers coming to the strip club. One guy say, yo, you should go in there. Go in there. And Punk said it. We going in there, you know, and I followed them. Suddenly, I went inside the strip club, and to this day is the most funniest thing, like the bartenders, especially the strippers, the look of their faces when we went in there. And I remember, like, the bartender calling the cops, and Sal, the owner of FIP, was like, no, don't worry, I got this control, don't worry about it, because they was filming it. So we went to the stage, and I was so distracted with the strippers. I'm like, I can't even wrestle, bro. Like, I'm looking at the strippers, I want to give them a dollar. You know, he's giving me a 619, a stripper pole. We went to the Bull Moon Room with the VIP, gave me the most biggest hip toss to the sofa couch, and I don't know why, but we was like a bunch of retards going to a strip club to perform. And basically, we took all the money away from the strippers. And I remember the CM Punk told the stripper, or dance, what you want to call them, that you are, you know, I don't want to say the word, but.
Oh, we could say it yelled at her, you're a whore.
Yeah. So he did a Terry Funk on this chick. So after that, the match was over. I supposed to go back to my locker, but no, I went back to the strip club and just fans giving me dollars. And I was, for 20 minutes, I was enjoying myself with the dancers, because at that time, I was addicted to strippers. I was like the Al Bundy of strip clubs. So I went out there, and I went back out, and suddenly I saw two dancers wanted to attack CM Punk for calling them a whore. And I'm telling Punk, are you kidding me? And Sal is like, I take care of it, and Sal took care of everything, and me and CM Punk, we just left our asses off. And to this day, we still talk about how extreme this pitiful car anywhere. It was a classic, man. It was very classic. I just seen it for the first time a couple of weeks ago on YouTube. Like, I couldn't believe it on YouTube. I'm like, oh my God, it's a sick club for like 2005.
We have a traditional question that's normally asked by Spug of Wrestle Talk Radio on here, because he's a trained wrestler based out of the Cleveland area. And, we've had Steve Corino taking C.W. Anderson to a torture bar overseas and running into a Samoa Joe looking like woman. We've had Kenny King involved with a fake stabbing of Bryan Danielson with Delirious. Besides the story that you just mentioned, what, if possible, is the greatest, rib that you've either been a part of or had pulled on you or just happened to be witnessing going, damn, I love the wrestling business?
That's a problem for me, because I always get wasted when I do ribs and I don't remember the next day. A lot of people tell me, like, you just notice what you did. I, like, know what I did. And they tell me the stories. Like,
well, let me ask this. Do you remember the 2004 Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup? Because night one I saw you, you were fine. Night two in St. Pete, you walk in, and I'm like, what the hell happened to you?
What I was told, that I was going through a depression, because at that time, you know, like, me and the indie worker had a fallout. He was like my best friend. So I was drinking booze. I became depressed, and I started smashing windows in the hotel. And I smashed my hand on this window, and basically, like, maybe a 15-inch glass went straight through my hand, my thumb all the way to my pinky. And Matt Stryker was there for the WWE. He took me to the hospital. The doctor was mad at me because I was intoxicated and laughing about the situation. I went back to the hotel. I had a bunch of people stay in my room. And I'm saying to myself, like, how I got here, why I got this bandage in my hand. And they told me. Suddenly, police came to my hotel room. There was a trail of blood. The first floor, I think it was the Red Roof or some kind of cheap
hotel. Yep, Red Roof Inn, over by the Florida State Fairgrounds.
Yeah, there was a trail of blood going all to my room. So a cop came, and the cop said, sir, do you know anything about these broken windows downstairs the first floor? And I'm like, no, sir. Like, I mean, I seen a couple of people fighting yesterday. He looked at my hand, because I was hiding my hand. I had my hand back of my, out of my back.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, he looked at me, he looked like, so why your head is bandaged? And I told him, excuse me, officer. You know, these two guys that was fighting in the street, they broke a glass window. I picked up a glass and basically I got cut. He was like, do you know these two guys that was fighting? Because there was a couple of broken windows and we need to, like, talk to them. Yes, you go to room 103. They did. They must be sleeping. So they went to room 103. And Jack Evans and Teddy Hart was in room 103. And I'm guessing they had marijuana at the table. A lot of gimmicks. All I know, I saw the cop having Teddy Hart and Jack Evans with handcuffs. And I was telling Matt Stryker, we got to leave. We got to go back to Brooklyn right now. So we left. And that's they want to saw you at the Petersburg. And that's what everybody say, oh, what happened to you? I'm like, dude, I don't know. All I know, I got to leave. So after that, I saw Teddy Hart like a couple of weeks ago. He's like, hey, buddy, like, I can't believe somebody locked me up. I was like, oh, man, I can't believe. What a jerk. I was like, yes. The police came to my room, and they arrested me and check. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know, Teddy Holmes. Like, I'm sorry, bro. And he keeps saying, man, I hope that guy gets such and such and this and that. I'm like, yeah, what a creep. And I just start laughing. I laugh. So things like that, I get trashed, and I forget that people tell me these things. Like, oh, man, like, I did so many pranks on, like, CM Punk and my friend Monster Mac, and, you know, like, I remember these things. And the next day, I get this evil look, like, you know what you did last night? I'm like, no, what I did, and I get in trouble. Like I'm in school. I went to the principal office.
Oh, wow. He is the notorious 187 Homicide. You're listening to Online World of Wrestling Radio as we go on our third hour, Run DMC night. We'll get to some music later on, celebrating the return of the playoffs of the New York Yankees. Jersey Girl wanted me to ask you, this is an interesting one. If there was to be a life story made of yours into a film, which actor would you want to play you? Don't say New Jack, because nobody thinks you two look alike, no matter what you think, man.
Here we go, thumb double. Oh, man, that is a good one. Oh, I would say Al Pacino, but, you know, I don't know. He doesn't look good these days, especially, you know, Joe Pesci. And Joe Pesci is, like, one of my favorite actors. I'll be honest, that's a tough one. I really don't know. I think I got to say, Jayden Anderson. I don't think Nick Rowe, you know, like, I just heard that Mick Foley doing a movie. I want people to watch Mick Foley and stand at the wrestler. I saw the wrestler for the first time, 15 minutes. I was disgusted. I was very disgusted, not because of the actor and the writing. It's like, man, I do really see this in real life. This is like true story, you know, and it makes it look very bad, like very bad. So I'm like, man, so when I heard Mick Foley is doing a movie, I'm like, that's the movie that you got to check out. If there's any movie that talks about wrestling, it's Mick Foley's story. Mick Foley, of everybody, got the best story in wrestling, and hopefully, he's one of the writers who's making this movie, and hopefully it will come out great, and I know what it is. I really hope it goes to some dance film and have an Oscar. But the wrestler, oh, man, I like Mickey Rowe. You know, not trying to disrespect him and the writers, but man, that movie, like, completely sucks in another way.
And that takes care of Linda Bosco's question from Seattle, Washington. Hopefully she got that in. Another question that was sent to us, I can't even pronounce that name, so I'm not even going to try. Have you been approached possibly by the kayfabe commentary folks? They've done some really great U shoots with Bob Holly, New Jack, Maria Kanellis, and recently Dixie Carter. If you were approached, would you do a U shoot thing? If you don't know what they're talking about, Homicide, they basically let fans email in questions to the Kayfabe Commentaries company, and then no matter how brilliant or dumb the questions are, they get fired off at you. Would you do? I know you did a DVD a while back for Declaration of Independence website with Sean McCaffrey, but would that, have you heard of this company, or would you want to be involved in something like that?
I've never heard of that, buddy, but I want to do shoots, but it might be, gotta be like after my, when my career is over. Like, I'm not even into like doing shoots. Back in the day, I was doing shoots because I was young in this business, and plus, it was giving me money, so, but I did it, but I was saying to my, yeah, money is good, but I was saying to myself, like, who am I talking about this? You know, I've been doing this like for a little bit. Look at people like Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, you know, Tommy Rich. These guys, they're the ones who be telling stories, not me. You know what I'm saying? So after that, when I did like a couple of shoots for RF Video, you know, DOI, you know, a couple of other sites, man, I was like, I don't like doing shoots. And to be honest with you, I didn't even like doing interviews. You know, like, I got so many people that want to do an interview, and I'm not trying to disrespect people like yourself, you know, because I know you for a very long time. You're a great guy. You know, you deserve to make this radio station bigger the way it is. Same thing that Mike Johnson for the PWI Insider and a couple of guys that I'm going to do. But, you know, I don't like doing interviews, and I don't like doing shoot tapes because I feel like I should do it when my wrestling career is over, because I got a lot of stories to tell. Even though I've been doing this for 16 years, I got a bunch of stories to tell, but sometimes I don't want to let it out because it kind of hurt my character, or whatever you want to call it. It might hurt the wrestling business because, like I say, there's a wrestling fans and there are smart wrestling fans, you know, and the smart wrestling fans, I'm not saying they're the ones who's killing the business, because I feel that everyone's killing the business. Everybody thinks Vince McMahon, and he's not killing it. It's all of us, you know. Like, so like, yeah, it's Homicide, you want to do a shoot? Yeah, let's go. And I'm completely kayfabe, and the fans see it, and they've been like, oh my God, I didn't do this. Oh, this is horrible. Like, oh, boo, you know, like stuff like that. Like, I'm not really into it, but I like to do one when my career is over, and I really don't know when my career is over. Sometimes I feel like Terry Funk. Ah, I hate the business. I don't want to do this no more. Then I get the itch. Like, yeah, man, I can't wait for this weekend. And then I get that again. Ah, I hate this. So I'm like off and on.
Mm-hmm. Roberta Mikhail of Brooklyn says, thank you so much for your time in wrestling. I was in attendance at the Coney Island TNA event and loved every second of it. However, I heard a story later on that you were injured in that match. Can you tell us what happened and what your current health is? Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah, well, of course, July 2nd, it was kind of funny because I was telling my brother about this the other day, and it's kind of funny that I made my debut on my own time in Brooklyn, and, you know, somebody tried to take away my dream away when I did the show in Coney Island in Brooklyn, and it was July 2nd. But what happened is there was a four-way. It was myself, Amazing Red, Jalito, and I'm sorry, I forgot. Oh, and Spanky, Brian Kendrick. And basically, it was like the first maybe 2 minutes of the match. We just started the show. We went out there. The crowd is great. Sellout. Brooklyn's representing. Went out there. Me and Ray was from Brooklyn. We happy. First 2 minutes of the match, I go for a dive to Spanky. Completely overshot him. And just, like, completely missed him. It's almost like a pitcher throwing a ball to a catcher, but the catcher missed the ball, and the ball hits the cage behind him. It was like that. So I did my dive, the one I always do, and for the first time ever, I got hurt. I was completely missed. So when I landed on my back, and I felt like, okay, it didn't hurt. I got up, I went back down. So I'm saying to myself, I feel funny. So I wrestled, I finished the match. I went back to the locker. The trainers looked at me, you know, I couldn't walk great. Like, I was walking with a gift. The next day, with this show in Asbury Park, New Jersey, I felt worse. So basically, the story short, I did a dive in Brooklyn, completely missed. I got hurt. I got 2 groin injuries, a muscle strain, soft tissue, pelvis. I don't know what that means, but it hurts. And a cracked rib. And since July 2nd, I did not wrestle till September 17th and the 18th. The 17th, I brawl. I could do brawling, but if you want to put me in a ring with people like Brian Dennison, Samoa Joe, Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards, I can't do it. I got a bra. The next day, I wrestled in Boston, of all goddamn places, and I wrestled Jay Lethal. And the same thing, you know, like, when they called nothing. So I was like, okay, you be a Ric Flair, and I do all Terry Funks. And I was doing a Terry Funk psychology. But, like I was saying, like, I'm not 100%. Right now, I'm healing very slowly. I would say I'm 80% healed right now. I'm not trying to go 85, I'm trying to go 100. And, you know, and just go out there and just do what I do best. But, yeah, man, July 2nd, it was a nightmare. I just couldn't believe that I got hurt in my hometown from a dive that I always do. And it was a freak accident. You know, like Brian Kendrick thinks that was his fault. It wasn't his fault. You know, it was a freak accident, you know. It happened. I always told my students, when you become a wrestler, you're going to get hurt. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you do a punch and kick, you're going to get hurt. And that day, I got hurt. Matter of fact, that's the worst injury I ever had in my wrestling career.
Before we get into your return to ROH and involved with other promotions, the big boss of our website from the Wild Talk Radio side, Tim Stein, wanted to know, he's listening while he's watching preseason hockey in Canada. Wanted to know, you seem to be a fan of the old school NWA. Do you wish that the territorial days still existed today? And if possible, would you ever want to get involved in running an indie federation?
Oh, yes. I love to. Well, I think I was thinking, like, after I want to retire, I'm going to make my own promotion. I had a school. It's called the Doghouse Pro Wrestling Academy. A lot of guys came from there. Kavar was one. Max Schlecker, even though he came from Johnny Ross, he was starting to turn up the Doghouse. Ezekiel Jackson. I'm sorry about messed his name up. The biggest guy in WWE with the red trunks, who teamed up with the Russian. We call him Ricky Atlas when he was in my school. Now they changed his name to Viku Jackson or something like that. You know, you got Lizzie Valentine, who's a female. Becky Bayless, who's a female, who's also a graduate from the Doghouse with Mr. TNA. Azarel, who went to Japan for Dragon USA. You got a lot of upcomers like Papa Don, the heavy hitters, Ed Havoc, and Steve Mack. But, I'd love to have the territories, man, because I think it would be very different. I think it would bring the business back, man. I've been telling everybody that I got a great feeling that the year 2020, that's when wrestling is dead. Right now, we on the, I would not say like a flat line or coma, but let's say that the wrestling business died very slowly. And a lot of people are blaming on Vince McMahon, and it's not his fault. And I hate that. That's almost like people telling me, oh, the Yankees bought the World Series. Ah, give me a break. We ain't bought the World Series. But it's almost the same thing. Like a lot of people saying that Vince McMahon, the one who ruined the wrestling business. I tell you this, God forbid, knock on wood, if something happens to him, when he passed away, the business is going to die. Right now, he's the heart of the business. I don't know why. That's the way I feel. You know, and there's got to be somebody out there that got to come out exactly the brains like Vince McMahon. Because McMahon is the one who brought to the rest of the business to launch their life. I love the NWA. I wish the NWA, I mean, the NWA still exists, but it's not like high peak like it used to be. And I'm hoping it comes back the way it was with the territories like Georgia, Florida, you know, New York and Chicago and L.A., you know, I hope it comes back. But instead, we got these small local independents like FIP running and say like Sheldon Road, then you got another promotion 20 yards away from the venue and taking talent is not helping the business at all. You got major companies, major independent companies like CZW, Jersey All Pro, Donny Ross School, who's also doing the promotion, Reign of Honor, FIP, Evolve. But if you think about it, you look at the roster, and you could take that roster and put it another roster. It's the same thing. People see the same thing. Like, people don't want to see Homicide, like, go to Reign of Honor and go to like another promotion, same thing. I think the fans gonna like get sick of it. Right now they're not used to it, but when they get used to it, forget it. Everything's gonna go down here. And in my personal opinion, I think the wrestling business is dying slowly and nobody is not seeing it. And it's a shame because, man, like me and Steve Mack, we always talk about, I wish I was born like in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, I was born in 77, but I wish I was born like 1971. I could be a big star in the 80s and the early 90s. A lot of people like Bret Hart, you know, Ric Flair, Hogan, Bruno Sammartino, Superstar Billy Graham, Manny Pinnetta, Terry Funk, all those guys, man, they, look at them. They stars, you know, and they time. Look at the era now. You got people like myself, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, you know, Loki. It's not the same like the roster in the 80s, you know, because I think like a lot of old school things, people like myself and the guys that I mentioned are still a bunch of marks, you know, and a bunch of fan base that doesn't care about the business at all. That's why the old school guys, not saying they treat us like crap, because some of them treat us like gold. And I cannot name one person who's treating me like garbage, because everybody's treating me very well. But there's a lot of people that I've seen, a lot of these old school guys, they treat these newcomers like a bunch of, like, you don't know nothing. He's just a mark for myself back in the 80s, and that's what you are. You don't know nothing about the business, and it's a shame, you know? And I'm wishing that somebody out there wake the hell up. If they got their own company and they know what they're doing, I hope, good luck, man. Good luck, because time is ticking and everybody is not getting younger.
For fans that tuned in to ROH's Glory by Honor 9, they witnessed Roderick Strong finally become ROH World Champion, defeating Tyler, I'm going to WWE Black. The lights went down, they came up, and you were standing in the ring. What can you go into the conversations you had with ROH into after you were released from TNA? What led to a return to Ring of Honor for this trip?
I just got my release. It was August. And, you know, I was saying to myself, this is what I needed. I need to go back because the problem with the end of the TNA days, it was more pride and less business. And when you do television wrestling, it's going to be more business and less pride. It's weird, but that's the way it is. And to me, I was kind of like screwing up because I had a lot of pride and less business. So when I got released, I called up one of the guys in the roster, good friend of mine, and he called, I guess, Hunter. And Hunter is like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I was dreaming about this, and, you know, and he said, don't worry about it. You got your spot back. And I got to give big shout-outs to Hunter because he helped me, Kerry helped me. I loved it when I saw Jim Cornette, man. Because me and Jim Cornette got a little bit of history in Ring of Honor, but when he saw me, he gave me a big hug. He said, welcome back, Carlson. That's when I knew, like, I'm accepted back. When I saw a lot of guys coming to me, especially the Briscoes, like, oh, yeah, you're coming back. You know what that means, road trips. And me and the Briscoes, we think, like, we're a bunch of rock stars. I'm talking about, like, these rock stars go to the road and trash the hotels and leave. That's us. So when he told me, like, Mark and Jay Briscoe told me, oh, yeah, you back. You know, and like, the new faces, like, they're happy that I'm back. It was like, man, it was an honor that I was appreciated coming back to something that came. And I can't wait these upcoming shows to come back and show my thing because there's a lot of new fans in Ring of Honor that didn't saw me. They saw the Hollywood homicide from TNA, but they didn't see the aggressive, the Puerto Rican version of Brock Tillman in Ring of Honor. And I can't wait to show them because they're going to be like, oh, my God, like why he wasn't doing this in TNA, you know? So I can't wait, man.
Now, you're coming into a product now that is not fully DVD-based. They're on HDNet. Take us through a we can take the wall down for a second and just talk to you. Wrestling in a live audience
as opposed to wrestling for a TV audience, how different is that for you as a person in constructing a match?
TV, I mean, my character, and I'm very aggressive and intense. So when the light is on, when I go out there, you know, I got to calm down. The habits that I do, the time is a little bit, you know, short. It's not enough storytelling. It's a buildup of a story. With not tape TV, it's just like go out there and have fun and make sure that you pull in the story into the match and put the keys into the match for the people to understand. But when you do TV wrestling, it's mostly less time in and make sure you got the story involved for the pay-per-view. Not televised, go out there, have fun.
How interactive are you going to be in Evolve and Combat Zone as well? Because you also were involved with those products the same weekend as Glory by Honor.
I'm going to try my best and just try all the guys that, like CZW, I got respect for them. New ownership, you know, me and DJ High, we spoke business, we spoke a lot of things. And, you know, I like to do new stuff. You know, it's like if you come back to the Indies, you got to start all over again. It's not really start all over again. It's just like there's a lot of new faces out there, you know, that you want to work. And that's what I want to do right now. I just want to work with a lot of new faces out there. There's a future for this business who can do good things to myself, and I can do good things to them, you know. And a lot, I'm going to try my best. Right now, I just left a company with contracts. I think I got no decision when I'm going to sign, especially with Ring of Honor. I mean, I'm with Ring of Honor, but as right now, I'm still a free agent, and I'm just trying to make money, support my family, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't got no major contracts, you know, and a good deal, then, you know, that's a different story. But right now, I'm going to do Dragon Gate USA. I'm going to do Evolve. I'm going to do JP. I'm going to do CZW. I'm going to do, like, Ring of Honor, you know, these other promotions that want to make money. I will not do a promotion that you're a money mark. You know what I mean? Like, to the people don't understand that, basically a promoter who doesn't care to make money, who doesn't care about the product to the fans, you know, like, they just want to go out there because you're a fan of that wrestler, you know, and that's not me. I don't like doing that. I got a lot of phone calls about, hey, man, like, I want to use you. You know, I also had, like, people like Iron Sheik, Bob Backlund, you know, like, Superstar Billy Grant. I'm saying to myself, okay, that's cool. That's good for you, but I do I really need to hear this? You know, like, I really don't. You know, and I'm still going to work with these promotions, you know, until now. Like, right now, a lot of people are joking around that I'm like the next LeBron James. I don't know where I'm going to go. Hey, man, that's the way I feel, that let it be, you know. But right now, I'm going to do Ring of Honor. I'm going to make a new legacy in that company. The same thing with Evolve. I'm good friends with Gabe. A lot of people don't know about this. Two people made Homicide. It was Frank Abigail for Jersey Old Pro, and also with Gabe Spicoli. Those two, they made Homicide. You know, it's not like I'm going back to Evolve for a favor for Gabe. I just like his vision. You know, I like his touch of the business, and that's why I want to work with him. You know, I don't like working with people who are sleazy that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. You know, I hurt my body for a reason, to perform and to give the fans what they deserve to get, and I like it. You know, I don't want to work for a company that I get hurt, and they're going to give me a hot dog and a CC soda. Come on now. So let's see what happens as right now. But right now, I'm enjoying my time. I'm enjoying the companies I'm going to work for. Hopefully, we can work with each other. We can do something for this business. Because, like I said, we are the last era in this wrestling business. And time is ticking, and we're not getting young.
I can't leave without... We opened with sports. We got to go back to sports. My friends laugh when I tell them this story of a night at TNA where after a show, you and I and Hernandez watched the Knicks get embarrassed on national television by the Los Angeles Lakers. So we both have a love for the Knicks. At any point in your mind, did you think LeBron was really coming to New York, or did you go, he's so not coming here, even if I show up at his house and threaten him 51-50 style, he's not coming?
Yeah, I really thought he was going to stay in Cleveland, but I know that he wasn't going to New York. But I got an inside scoop that he's supposed to come to New York, that Jay-Z is supposed to do some business with the Nets and the Knicks. But things didn't turn out very good. He went to South Beach, and right now they're Miami Heat of the New York Yankees. Everybody say, y'all fighting the world championship. If you didn't hear Phil Jackson's comments, you can have three great players. Look at the Boston Celtics. They had three great players, and they won championships, but they did lose. You know, like, I never believe on a hot team and go all the way to the championship. Perfect example, I said it earlier today. The Philadelphia Phillies are the hottest team in baseball right now. And their pitching is unbelievable. It's really, like, incredible. But do you feel they're going to go all the way to the world championship? I'm not saying they're not, but I never believe on a hottest team and go straight to the championship. Look what happened to the New England Patriots. Those undefeated and get some beat up, the New York Giants. You know, and I don't believe in that, man. That's like, it's like wrestling. It's a work. You know what I mean? So, but the postseason, I can't wait. And also for the basketball season, because after the 95 Knicks, when they lost to the San Antonio Spurs, I stopped watching basketball. But right now, I'm going to get into it. And my second favorite team is the L.A. Lakers, because I like LeBron James. He is from New York.
I'm St. John's grad. I love me some Ron Artest.
Yeah, man, but it's going to be very interesting when the match I want to see is the Heat when it goes to Cleveland. I want to see the fans, how they treat LeBron James. That is going to be a riot, because I always say that the Cleveland, the fans are the most hardcore fans in the world. It could be basketball, it could be football, it could be baseball. Cleveland is the most hardcore fans in the United States. And I put Philly on second. I put New York on third, but we got that swagger. We confident. So that's a different story.
On that note, we're going to thank Commissar for being with us. Don't forget, you can find him on Facebook, but he's not going to be the way you find him. I believe you got your Lucha side right now. Is that what your name is on the
book? Yeah, I got these crazy names. I got a little sister who I don't know nothing about the internet. All I know is on, off, and reply. That's it. But other than that, yeah, it's Lucha Side, Facebook. I got a stupid Twitter, Notorious 17/D. That's not going to be up for a while because I got these knuckleheads. You got a bunch of kids who are wrestling me, saying some Russian comments, so I can't wait to see if I give them a spanking. But I'll be going to my Facebook a lot. It's Lucha Side, Facebook.
Alright, he is the Notorious 187 Homicide. Check him out in the next few weeks at ROHWrestling.com, EvolveWrestling.com, CZW.com, Jersey All Pro and all those stuff. Stay with us for a moment. After the break, we'll get into some WWE and TNA news as we head to Hell in a Cell this Sunday. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be right back.
These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York.
Hey, everyone. This is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kind of did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio. which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Hog Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Brett Derry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
All whom the quickest of all time.
Give me back the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
TJ Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. For as long as the internet wrestling community has been around, there have been people and internet radio shows that will bitch and complain about every little thing they see. Well, the crew over at WrestleTalk Radio are trying to change that by highlighting the positives of each and every WWE and TNA event. These wrestlers put their body on the line to entertain us each and every week. So how about we praise them, instead of bitching about the little things that get to us? So with that in mind, you should come listen to WrestleTalk Radio, Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, or right after any WWE or TNA pay-per-view, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Because this is how we say thank you to those that entertain us.
There's so much more to the internet than porn. Like this.
Just like driving on an open highway. Turning faces, stars, and stripes. Hand me one more, that's what I'm here for.
All my favorite songs.
Playing the best country music.
It's the absolute best in country music with the TD Top 20. The top 20 songs in all of country music. Right here on WTR with your host, The Trey Dog.
Come on, DJ. Hit me with another track.
Get up and party while we count them down. And check in with artists that make these hits happen, like Jason Aldi.
Bartending is, I can do that. Anything you like to drink, I'm pretty good at that. Crown and Seven is my specialty.
And Carrie Underwood.
That's an amazing, sad, and happy time in somebody's life. And the daughter saying, it's okay, Mom, you know, he's good. He treats me like he's supposed to treat me. This is what you would want for me. This is a man that you would want for me.
Are we on the air?
Yes, you are. The TD Top 20 Countdown with your host, The Trey Dog, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central, every Saturday night on Wild Talk Radio and the SNS Radio Network.
The station with the
best music.
I love the music.
Best music.
Wild Talk Radio.
WTR.
Hey, this is Charlie Haas, one half of the world's greatest tag team. And you're listening to me on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
packing my gimmick and none of them. Tears and fears for my peers, they risen. You think that it is, if not it isn't.
All on World of Wrestling Radio, back here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Damn, that was an interesting commercial if you ever heard one. Sir Rockin will get into that info in a little bit here. Books, believe it or not, Sir Rockin is actually going to get on the headsets and talk wrestling with us, kids. He never does this, so this is pretty cool. Mace not available due to taking his little brawler to something way cooler than us. He went to go see a very neat Tim Burton art exhibit somewhere in his residence location, stuff from the Batman films and other, endeavors. So we're happy for him. The Spud guy wanted to be here tonight due to circumstances beyond his control. He could not. So I get a really cool thing. I get Sir Rockin' to follow 90 minutes of the notorious 187 homicide. He was putting your Phillies over big time, dude. Wow. Did you, like, slip him $20 and I missed it?
Yeah. We had a conversation before we went on air. Don't worry about it.
I knew it.
Don't worry about it.
Believe it or not, kids, it just feels like last week, maybe, yeah, because it was last week, we talked about a pay-per-view, and hey, there's one this Sunday. Are you kidding me? Hell in the Cell, as we found out this past Friday night on SmackDown, and Dan Tambruno mentioned it earlier in the night. Paul Bearer is back. As if The Undertaker Kane didn't have enough ammunition. Oh, yes! He's back. So now at Hell in the Cell, this is the announced card. We don't have... I don't know if Sorokin found anything from spoilers out of wherever they're running tonight.
They're not up yet? No, they're live this Friday.
Oh, that's right. They're live this Friday on Sci-Fi. Damn, I got so used to talking about them, and I even wrote a little note going, remember live Sci-Fi, and I'm going, nah, they're not live. They're never live. Son of a bitch, they're live.
Yeah.
This is what's announced so far. Kane and Taker, Hell in the Cell. Right. Started in 97 there. Why not do the whole circular thing? Randy Orton, Sheamus, Hell in the Cell. John Cena versus Wade Barrett. If Barrett wins, Marky Mark goes Nexus, baby. If Superman, as Omega likes to call him, wins, there's no more Nexus, kids. I feel shame. This one announced before Edge beat the living snot out of a computer on Monday Night Raw. Miz Morrison and Daniel Bryan, triple threat submissions count anywhere match for the U.S. Championship. Thanks, Vince Russo, for creative input there. Tim Stein's favorite wrestler, Natty Neidhart, will be getting a shot at either the lay or the cool of the Divas Champions. I wanted to blow my brains out listening to these two do commentary last night / this morning. Of these matches so far, Rock, one that you've been looking forward to as a fan, and one as the producer of this show and Wrestle Talk Radio, that you're sitting there going, God, I don't want to even think about the possibility of this match even on a pay-per-view.
From the historical standpoint, Kane and The Undertaker, because it's 13 years in the making, because on 10/05, Kane debuted. First ever Hell in a Cell, Bad Blood. So that's, even though their match at Night of Champions stunk a little bit, just a tiny bit, it didn't live up to expectations. This one should be really good. And for a sleeper, I think this triple threat submission, that might be pretty good to watch.
Now, unfortunately, due to the ring on my finger being in my anniversary, I will not be watching live, but I'll be there in spirit. And fortunately, that pay-per-view, the October pay-per-view, I'll always remember for finding out that the late Brian Pillman passed away and was supposed to be a part of, funny enough, the night that Kane and Undertaker had their setup. So it'll be interesting. Could we possibly see the return of Triple H? Because every time you turn around, Sheamus is fella. I put Triple H on the shelf, and I stink with the Irish. That's Mace. Mace does that better. Could this be, since this is either, it depends on what you look at. If you look at WWE.com, they have a recent thing on the history of the Hell in a Cell. the names that show up all the time, Rock, and fans can agree. If Taker, it's Triple H. At one point it was Taker's baby, then it became Triple H's baby. Possibility of a Triple H return to screw Sheamus? Coming out from underneath the ring, jumping from the roof. I mean, what are you thinking here?
I don't see Triple H coming back yet. I see him back. Here's my honest opinion. He's coming back after when Linda's Senate thing's over. I think all McMahons are going to be back once the Senate thing has run its course. So probably in November, December, we'll see Hunter. I don't think they'll bring him back here. Maybe a big return for Survivor Series.
And so if Linda loses, it's right back to R-rated WWE.
Yeah, pretty much.
We see the sledgehammer and all that funness and Triple H coming.
We'll see blood again.
Oh, yeah, forget. Don't forget. No blood allowed. Unfortunately, what we're going to see this Monday night is Jackasses. No, I'm not talking the wrestling. I'm talking Johnny Knoxville is supposed to be involved some form or fashion in Monday Night Raw. We want to pay tribute to the folks at My Network TV, which was a byproduct of a bunch of mergers back in the day with Rupert Murdoch's companies. So bye-bye SmackDown, hello, a live show up on Sci-Fi. If you watched this past Friday night, you saw what's possibly Christian, Jason Rezo's last match till at least WrestleMania. He's gone under the knife to repair a torn pectoral. This is his first serious injury in many a year, so we wish him nothing but the best. Mace brought it up the night that we were live and had the end of NXT Season 2 and the girls... Diva Search, as Mace called it, show up for Season 3. We mentioned this being a possibility, and now, Rock, it looks like it's happened. NXT will move to WWE.com in the coming weeks to be a web show in the U.S. after they were unsuccessful in trying to find it, a network home. The last NXT aired tonight on Sci-Fi. International viewers will be able to catch the show in their usual slot time. Part of the deal for Sci-Fi to take SmackDown was to eliminate NXT from its schedule. And WWE, as we mentioned, we're hoping to land it somewhere. Obviously not. Your thoughts on that. This has happened to Velocity, this happened to Heat, so it's off to the graveyard with NXT, it looks like.
Yeah, pretty much, but I think it's on Telemundo or something. At least that's what I saw next week. Telemundo.
Yeah, it was on Universal HD, if you happen to get that on Saturday nights. They rerun Monday Night Raw and NXT after it, so we'll see what happens in the next week or two.
Yeah, Universal HD is now running Raw and then SmackDown.
Oh, they're going to run SmackDown right after. That's pretty far out, because most Friday nights I'm at ASW, All Stars Wrestling, ASWFlorida.com, cheap plug. If you were watching this past Monday Night Raw and also on SmackDown, you saw two very good competitive matches between the champs, Drew McIntyre and dashing Cody Rhodes, and the Hart Dynasty, and you heard them referred to as the WWE Tag Team Champions. Well, it looks like, according to WWE.com, they are actually retiring the WWE World Tag Team Championship, which has a lineage dating back to at least 1971. Some people actually take it further back. A lot of wrestling publications, the PWI folks, the Aftermags. We love Bill Apter on this network. Many of them actually recognized the WWF at one point tag team titles, taking it back to the Capital Wrestling era before F was founded in the late 1963, going back to Toots Mont and Vince McMahon Sr. So it looks like, kids, the active tag team championships are the ones that were won in 2002 when you had the brand split. I'm a purist. This pisses me off a lot. There's some people that are going, they're belts, dude. Who cares? Some people say tradition bites, as the old NWO phrase goes. And with the NWO, yeah, that was cool in 96, 97. But it seems to be Rock that every time I turn around, as much as Vince is putting these guys over, and you know, Gorgeous George into the Hall of Fame recently, and you see these names listed, Buddy Rogers listed in the opener. You know, death of a championship, it's a little weird to say.
Yeah, but you gotta understand, it's WWE, and they seem to be doing it with a whole bunch of championships. I'm not sure what they did with the women's title. I haven't looked that up, because now it's the Divas Championship. I don't know if they've gotten rid of that legacy, too. But it's a crying shame that they're getting rid of the whole tag team title history. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame, and it's a shame that we're going to end up watching a live Friday Night SmackDown on Sci-Fi, and amazingly enough, no WWE on regular TV unless they do another Saturday Night's Main Event type thing. So hopefully you do get Sci-Fi on your cable network. Hopefully you even have cable. In this economy, you gotta choose between paying this bill and that bill. Some people can't get the cable, dude.
Yeah, I know, and that's why they have maybe Hulu, I think, might be running it, or WWE.com, eventually, I would think.
Interesting.
That's what they did with NXT, I believe. No, wait, and they did with that SmackDown, too, I think, was originally on Hulu.
Now, before we get into TNA news, this came from us, from our friends at Women Superstars Uncensored. Because we brought up Dragon Gate USA, I believe it's October 29th, is going to be going to the iPay-per-view concept, just like Ring of Honor did with Glory by Honor 9. November 6th, WSU will be debuting live on iPay-per-view in conjunction with the folks at Go Fight Live. That afternoon, their event will be filming two separate pay-per-view events. Their first event will air live, with a second taping to be aired at a later date. The live event will air at 5:30 p.m. for fans who can attend the show live in New Jersey. As a special bonus for fans who order the pay-per-view, WSU will be airing a special award ceremony, as Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine will be there to honor Mercedes Martinez as WSU Wrestler of the Year. She is also going to be honored as being the highest-ranked independent wrestler in the PWI Top 50 Females of Wrestling. Michelle Calloway, gotta be politically correct here. And believe it or not, that's the highest that a independent wrestler ranked in the history of that publication. Matches to air on the pay-per-view. Some of these, as a fan of the company, I'm dying to see, especially after the DVDs that happened recently, including Smokestack Lightning and, Alicia versus Mercedes. The current champion, Mercedes Martinez, will defend the WSU women's title against Jazz. If you saw the event, you know why. There's a new championship that Angel Orsini has created called the All Guts No Glory title. Sorry, All Guts. All Guts. It's been a long day. My voice is blah, 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 blah. She will defend against Mrs. Everything in WSU, Alicia. Battle of former TNA versus former WWE. Our recent guest, Tracy Brooks, is going to lock it up with someone that hopefully will want either show, will be the Wrestle Talk Radio or OWW Radio, will be scoring. And that will be the former WWE SES member, Serena. The ODB will make her WSU debut, taking on Portia Perez. Sassy Stephanie is going to take on WSU Spirit Champion Brittany Savage and the Friends of the Cosmo Club. If you're a DVD watcher, wow, is Rick Cataldo annoying. Speaking of Cosmo Club, the WSU Tag Champs, Cindy Rogers and Janet, are going to take on the Bell Saints in an uncensored rules match. Jessica Havoc versus Amy Lee. Amber's going to take on Brittany Force. Go to WSUWrestling.com. Check that out. Some interesting Diva news, Knockout news. This one shocked a few people because Lisa Verone, formerly known as Victoria in WWE, known as Tara in TNA, was supposed to have been a part of their event. I believe it was Rahway, New Jersey, and there were stories that came out of there going, she didn't appear, some said she went to the hospital. Well, this came directly from Tara herself. In my youth, I was a sun worshiper in capital letters. I grew up in the desert of Southern California, and I would lay out for hours on end. Even recently, I would tan indoors because they think it makes me look leaner on TV. Well, fans, that is all caught up to me. I went to a dermatologist because I had a bump on my hip, turned out to be nothing. But the doctor noticed a mole near my collarbone that didn't look quite right, cut it off and tested it, and it turned out to be basal cell carcinoma. Not a fun one to hear about. It's the most common form of skin cancer. It was cut off or biopsied, and next week they're going to cut around the surrounding tissue, and it should be 100%. It is super minor because they caught it early. She goes on to tell fans, definitely go forth and use your sunscreen. We wish her nothing but the best. Definitely send her. I believe she's got a Twitter. She's got a Facebook. I think there's MySpace. I think it's either Lisa Verone or Tara or somewhere along those lines. And hopefully you were one of the folks that went to the events that we talked about in New York and also in Oklahoma City. If you attended the New York event, you got the shock of a lifetime because you saw a championship change hands. And that was the amazing Red taking out Jay Lethal to win the X Division championship. He subsequently lost the championship to Jay Lethal at the Rawway event, but the Hammerstein Ballroom, some friends were there, said it was pretty cool to see the Black Machismo, oh, former Black Machismo, he's not Black Machismo anymore. Also at that event, Angelina Love pinned Tara, as we mentioned, Pope D'Angelo De Niro defeated Rhino in a tables match. Team 3D took out Ink Inc. Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson had a match.
Anderson.
Yeah, Anderson. He was defeated by Jeff Hardy. Tommy Dreamer pinned Abyss in a monstrous fall with Mick Foley as the official of that. If you were in Oklahoma City, you saw Jeff Jarrett take out Frankie the Future Kazarian. Douglas Williams pinned Eric Young. A knockout match. Velvet Sky over Madison Rayne. Samoa Joe defeated AJ Styles. The World Tag Champs. The Motor City Machine Guns took out Beer Money. Matt Morgan took out Brian Kendrick, and the Nature Boy Ric Flair was defeated via submission to Kurt Angle this past weekend. So definitely TNAWrestling.com. Check out all their live events that are out there for you. If you tuned in to this past week's Impact, boy, did you get another interesting evening. The good news is there was some wrestling rock. The bad news is... yeah, there was some wrestling. I'm digging this whole Motor City Machine Guns Gen Me feud. Many people, friends of mine, including those I see at ASW, Friday night, ASWFlorida.com, yes, cheap plug again. Look at these two cats, Max and Jeremy, and they're the ROH fans go, yeah, they're the Young Bucks. A lot of people are looking at them and going, hey, Matt and Jeff went into a time machine and this is what happened. It's an interesting look from what they're doing. They've laid up Alex Shelley. Not sure what's going on there. They've been focusing on Chris Sabin. Possibly the live event. This Thursday is the last of the taped events. This the 7th is the live event in Orlando with, I believe, getting ahead of myself. $100,000 battle royal. I know Dixie's got some money. Send it this way at P.O. Box. I'm kidding.
Yeah, really.
The knockout champs, Hamada, Taylor Wilde, took out Velvet and Lacey after Madison got involved. So looks like at Bound for Glory, we'll possibly have some sort of match with those kids. The one thing that irked me more than anything about this show, Rock, and we talked about it on Wrestle Talk Radio, which is on this network Sunday nights at 10, barring a pay-per-view, they're on at 11, is the way that they've handled the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And fans know that at Bound for Glory, it's Triple Threat, it's Anderson, it's Hardy, it's Angle. Big shock if Angle actually loses this thing. But you haven't even had your new champ crown yet, Rock, yet your old champ comes hobbling into the building looking like he escaped from the mummy ride next door at Universal, wanting revenge on Abyss. I'm going to pitch my idea, and then you can smack it upside the head with your Philadelphia Flyers hockey stick and say, bad idea, bad idea.
Okay.
Instead of having RVD hobble into the impact zone like you did, you could tease him on the air some more with the phone calls, show him some montage instead of the Jersey Shore gimmick with Rob Echoes and Becky Bayless, who were both very nice people. I'm happy they're going to get a push with the company, but you don't need to show that every single week. Show Rob Van Dam training, doing the Rob Van Dam split thing, lifting the weights, telling him I'm coming for Abyss, and have him show up at Bound for Glory. This just makes this world title match on 10-10-10 to look like to be total crap. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. I don't know what the fans think of it, but this kind of irks me as a wrestling fan. Not only did Rob Van Dam not physically drop the belt, but now he's waltzing back in the door kind of going like, all right, not only do I want Abyss at the pay-per-view, and I don't do a good Rob Van Dam, but I'm pretty close to it. I just need to... Okay, now I'm there, brother. And I not only do I want that, I want Abyss at the pay-per-view. I want the first shot at the world champ, because I am the former world champ.
I mean, is this a smack to the face of this main event that we're going to see on 10-10-10?
A little bit. As I wrote in the whole, because I produced WTR, the question I wrote was, should TNA have waited till after Bound for Glory to bring back RVD? Yes, they should have. And as Omega said, what the bleep?
Pretty much.
Yeah, in the reaction of Rob Van Dam coming back, it's pointless to bring him back before Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
Should have played up his injuries. I don't know, a hospital shot. Him trying to, in the gym, trying to work out. Stuff like
Absolutely.
That could have helped him work him back in instead of, well, Mr. Bandage, so I'm going to run down to the ring. Yeah, that's going to work.
Yeah, it also looks like at Bound for Glory we're going to get Lethal Lockdown with Fortune taking on the EV 2.0 guys. Is this the blow-off to these guys? To some people I talk to online and that email us at radio and onlineworldofwrestling.com always asking me, you know, what do you think of this? We know you hated ECW. And I didn't hate ECW, you guys. I just wasn't a fan of it. I'm not minding seeing guys like Raven and Rhino and Stevie. These are guys that I have seen compete in TNA, and they can still get out there, tell an entertaining story, and get it going. But is this the last hurrah for these? I mean, like, this Sunday could possibly be the last hurrah for Nexus. The Sunday after, this could be the last hurrah for EV 2.0.
As EV 2.0 exists, yeah, I don't think we'll see Sabu, Raven, or even Mick Foley. He might be done, too. You'll still see Tommy Dreamer, but as far as his backups, EV 2.0, I think they're done at Bound for Glory. I think that's the blow-off. And you'll have Fortune come out on top.
Yeah, and the biggest shock of all was the World TV Champion AJ Styles winning the ladder match with Sabu. Both factions brawled all over the damn building. It was a Vince Russo fest. Gotta love every second of it. But going back in the history of stuff, kids, when was the last time you went to a War Games or Lethal Lockdown or anything and the good guys had the advantage going in? That would be never.
Yeah, really.
I think they need to throw it in there once. Let the good, because the cage match, we've had this said before in this show. We talked about this. I've talked about this. There's some DVD interviews that have talked about this. That the cage match is designed for the heel to drop whatever. If he's a champ, it's designed for the champ to drop the strap to the baby. There's no heel that's ever going to walk out of a cage match and win here, guys. But I don't know. I'm kind of digging this Fortune gimmick, Brock.
Yeah, I am too. I think they'll have success with it. And Fortune needs to go over because, let's just face it, Sabu's not the Sabu we remember from 97, not even 2005. He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah, that's not the Sabu from Turning Point 2006, who opened a pay-per-view in a barbed wire match with Abyss.
Yeah, he's not that guy anymore.
So. And speaking of guys that aren't those guys anymore,
It looks like we're going to, if you watch Reaction, and I'm probably the only person that probably is.
Yeah.
Eric Bischoff talked very candidly in quotes about calling Sting and Nash old and bitter. If you buy the twit from Nash, Bound for Glory is it for him. Are we saddened by this? What's the legacy of Nash?
Legacy of Nash? He was a great champion in that was the Finger Poke of Doom that he lost the title. So, Kevin Nash has been always a good big man, but he's had injuries and then always backstage politics always thrown at him as the driving force behind them that will ruin his legacy. But he was a good big man. He lasted a long time. I think he'll be back in TNA or maybe even a run in WWE in his near future. You never know.
I'm interested to see it, especially now that you're mixing the Pope into here. Because the Pope's a bitter man. The Pope is bitter because he got the hose. That the congregation, I'm channeling Pope. I'm channeling Pope D'Angelo De Niro. I almost feel like I'm on that PTI show where they put the little plaque in front of you and they're like, you're Pope D'Angelo, you know, you're Donovan McNabb, you're Joe Torre, you're a pina colada that got spilled by Brent Roethlisberger type thing. The Pope is pissed. I would just, as we said earlier in the week and other shows, why this isn't a fatal four-way at the show, I have no idea. Just put the Pope in, put him in there, put the belt on this guy. If you watch him from the moment he comes from the curtain, and I know I'm channeling Triple H because Triple H said it best on Tough Enough One's DVD, if you can find it, grab it. I bought the DVD set when I lived in Nashville. He said it best. From the time you walk through that curtain, to the ring, to the back, you're telling a story. And bell to bell, right now, barring a lot of guys that worked their ass off the TNA, the Pope D'Angelo De Niro is telling great stories. And I'm intrigued as a fan to see where this is going. If the Pope's going to tweak and go heel, or is he using Nash and Sting's characters to get somewhere?
I think he's going heel, and which is a mistake, because he was over with the crowd, and you want to, you know, stay over with the crowd. He's your hottest
star. He's dropping dollars from the roof, man.
But Russo decides, let's switch him. He's at two over. Got him, turn him heel. We need more heels. Let's switch him over.
Well, here's the funny thing. The story came across the wires in OWW Genesis, and I want to put some weight behind it, but I don't in the remaining moments we have here. And thank you so much for staying with us as we enter our 22nd hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Yeah, pretty much.
Brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Story came across that there's story going around the WWE that they're going to possibly turn Cena heel, either be it with the Nexus gimmick or something along those lines. I don't understand. You go to a WWE live event, and I haven't gone to one in a while, but everyone that tells me they go to, the number one seller is Cena gear. You go to a TNA live event, and I haven't been to one since 2007, so Pope wasn't around. But I hear one of the biggest sellers on the TNAWrestling.com site and at live events are those glasses that the Pope wears. So why turn off the money cow? Because, as we've all found out, kids, unless you're the Four Horsemen, or you're Stone Cold Steve Austin, or you're The Rock, heel merchandise sells for jack.
Yeah,
as you saw with the Nexus t-shirts. Apparently Vince McMahon was recently seen going around the Stanford offices screaming, "Damn it, Nexus, why didn't you sell?"
It should have been a brighter yellow. That would have sold.
Taxi cab yellow doesn't do the trick anymore, I guess.
No.
Well, as we go into the end of this event, it was Run DMC night, and I can't go up further without remembering the legend that was Jay Mizell, also known as Jam Master Jay. If you ever saw Run DMC in concert, and I was fortunate enough to have, that's why they were picked as one of my favorite acts of all time. He was senselessly killed in New York of 2002, I believe. Murder never solved. If you, you know anyone knows anything, go to the NYPD and stop this don't snitch crap that goes on in these neighborhoods. I'm done off the soapbox. Tomorrow night, two of the gentlemen that normally join us here, the Spug, the Mace, and the end all be all of the WTR Network, the Omega, will be here for Otaku Talk Live. I believe that's 9 o'clock Eastern. I was told that their band appearance that they had last week kicked a lot of ass, and hopefully they'll be getting some folks like that soon. Do we have a Cindy Sin this Thursday, Siraka?
As we said on Anything Goes, it would be every other week, but guess what? Looks like we might be doing a show this week as well. Tune in for Anything Goes, and also check CindySin.com, which has a new poll up, so check that out. Vote on the poll, and send her an email, too.
And be unlike Rock, actually let it be from you, so that way Cindy won't yell at you going, Rock!
She's already been yelling at me all night already, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, goody. I'm on her do not talk list, and I don't care anymore, so. Friday night, do we have DJ Stein again? Or as we get closer to hockey, he's saying, forget this, I gotta start hitting my notes.
Always DJ Stein. He'll throw down the tunes. Don't worry about it. DJ Stein. Yeah. Right after some wrestling show.
Right, which I'm not allowed to talk about due to some legal stuff that was sent to me by the law offices of WOW, big freaking writing. Saturday night, it looks like. When does that country thing start? Is it this Saturday, or when are they coming on?
The Trey Dog starts next Saturday night, the 9th, with the TD Top 20 Country Countdown show. Everyone knows who Trey Dog is. If you don't, check out Wrestling News Live. He's been around this business longer than Alan and Tim. Trey has been around doing wrestling radio. But he's been a full-time DJ and coming to WTR to do some DJing. Right before the always exciting CB Radio, because you never know what we're going to do, and I'm promising you this week, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be exciting. If you thought last week was good with our prank calls, this is going to be even better. Can't say what we're doing, can't say who's coming on, but it's going to be awesome.
You sound like the U.S. government, like, we'd love to tell you, but we would have to kill you.
Yeah, I can't tell, because it's a secret, but it's going to be awesome.
Okay.
Big
double
stuff.
Double secret probation over on CB Radio. And Sunday night, 11 o'clock Eastern, to celebrate Tim Stein's birthday, which is the 3rd, my anniversary, but in advance, happy birthday to Tim. He turns 21. We're very happy he can legally drink in the United States.
Yeah.
He's been doing so in Canada since him and Drew Barrymore dated back in the day.
Yeah. We'll be covering Hell in a Cell. We'll be Omega, Mace, and Spug, most likely. Probably no Tim. But we'll see.
No me. I wish I was going to be around, but I'm not. Wedding anniversary is way more important.
Some wrestling show, who cares?
Yeah, then a meanie, then I'm sure I can find it legally, illegally, before Tuesday night, which will be another fun night of Online World of Wrestling Radio. Guests? I have no idea, because I haven't planned past this week.
But speaking of next Tuesday night, big
thing's
happening.
That's right, 8 o'clock, man. 8 o'clock. So happy.
Yeah, Johnny Cashmere, Matt Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
The Mind and Body with Matt and Johnny coming 8 p.m. Eastern to the Wild Talk Radio Network. Their first guest, TNA superstar Stevie Richards.
Oh, yeah. Check. Do a search of Stevie just outside. I believe his real name is Michael Manna. Do a search for him, and you will find that he is very spiritual. He's into physical training, personal training.
He has a blog on TNAWrestling.com all about that too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, go to there and check it out. They're live 8 o'clock in front of us, and we're ecstatically happy to have both of those gentlemen joining the Wild Talk Radio Network, which just keeps getting better and better each day. WildTalkRadio.com.
Can I throw a real quick plug in before Tim kills me?
Plug it.
Sign up for the newsletter, or he'll kill me.
Right.
Sign up, or he'll kill me. And that's not a good thing if I die.
Yeah, apparently some young lady named Keeks wants to interview me. Oh, dear God, this will be funny. As someone who's been doing interviews for 10 years, it's kind of funny when someone comes up to you and goes, we like to interview you for our newsletter, or could you do an interview for our website? And I go, dude, I do interviews, okay? I don't become an interview subject. Are you nuts? So definitely check out wildtalkradio.com for info. That's where you can listen to all these shows, get all the archives from it. OWW Genesis is our official forum. If you tweet, what's the Wild Talk tweet? Is it Wild Talk Radio?
Twitter.com/Wild Talk Radio. And apparently I made Tim laugh when I said sign up or he'll kill me. And follow us on Facebook at Wild Talk Radio Network.
Yep, and we're Online World of Wrestling, OWW Radio, also Twitter.com/, I think it's OWWCOM, not run by me, run by the big kahunas, Jason Dedrich, Brad Dykens, who thank him each and every week for them blessing me with the opportunity. I know I sound like a broken frickin' record, but as Metallica's James Hetfield likes to say, we're just people that we're just like you. Except we're not on a blog talk. I have a professional network that helps me look really damn good each and every week, and I thank Tim Stein and Sir Rock and each and every week that they have me on here and make me look and sound like a million bucks. And the people like Spug and Mace and Omega, and as much as she doesn't like me, even Cindy Sin and the Godfather and the Subway and all those cats. And soon to be Matt and Johnny. Hopefully they'll enjoy being here too.
Alan, stop what? Sucking up. Please, just stop sucking up. Please.
All right. Thanks to the Notorious 187 Homicide. Thanks to Downtown Bruno Lauer, Greg Oliver, Sorokin, Run, DMC, Jam Master Jay for bringing the music from Hollis all the time. What better way to go out with Jam Master Jay? OWW Radio. Have a good night. He'll be a